less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world.
I'm just a little anxious to get up there and whoop E.T.'s ass, that's all.
You will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind.
So kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today.
I could have been at a barbecue!
We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore.
And what the hell is that smell?
We will be united in our common interests. Perhaps space today is the 4th of July. And you will once again be fighting for our freedom.
Who's the menace? Huh? Who's the menace? Why can't I get another plane?
Climax with Randy Quaid drunkenly saying that they're going to kill all of us. I also apologize to anybody who may be hearing this program for the first time today. I swear to God, we're really not this moronic and disorganized.
We just have a weird obsession with Bill Pullman.
Dad, don't let's not say we. Don't go lumping me into your Pullman fetish.
It is totally you. Don't even.
You're unholy Pullman, love. Well, in any event, why, hello there. Thank you for not using, by the way, any one of the 900 times in that movie during which somebody says, my God, in a lower, like in lieu of actual dialogue or emotion. Just lower your voice and breathe the words out. My God. You want an Independence Day drinking game? You drink every time somebody says that. You'll be hosed by like 40 minutes into the film. My God, it's the Rick Emerson Show. It's 4 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11 and it's the month of June. June, in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming by and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, pardon me. Live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio. It is Friday, and welcome to day 12. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. If you'd like to engage with us telephonically today with whatever, your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your what have you. Did I ever read the story about the woman who survived an internal decapitation? I'm going to read it now just to get things rolling on the right foot. Just to sort of start things off in the right vibe, the right note, the right buzz. The right gestalt, as the Germans say. By the way, it's 503-733-2970. That is 503-P-by-70. You can also email us if you'd like. If you want to do that, by God, you can do it. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email the one and the only Tim Riley. It's tim@970.am. Sarah, that's Sarah with an H. It's Sarah at 970.am. Or Scotty J at 970.am. I have this now. I'm going to read this apropos of nothing. It's too bad you can't see the photo that goes along with this, because, God, this woman is a goggly-eyed freak. I guess you would be, too, if your whole skull had come apart. But, I mean, yeah, what are you going to do? Just to sort of, as we head into the weekend, I'm not armed with, and there's no time to do it today anyway, but we were going to start doing this business of playing one of the most depressing songs in the history of the world every single Friday. I think it's probably too much to do a full top five of the world's most depressing songs, but we are going to start playing, maybe we'll start doing this next Friday. There's too much happening today. We'd never fit it in. I mean, it'll be a miracle, and I'm going to tell you this right now. It'll be a freaking miracle if we fit in even a third of the things that we've got scheduled today. It's just that kind of day. I believe starting next Friday, though, we're going to begin going out every week with a fantastically downbeat song. I've already got the first couple picked. All right, well, we got this. Just to sort of get things, just to sort of establish the mood for today. This is Dateline Denver, Colorado. Attention, Seamus. Woman survives the internal decapitation. Miracles do happen. That's what doctors said about 30-year-old Shannon Malloy. Hey, that's not that idiot woman that was bitching about the Harry Potter books, is it? Is this the same Shannon Malloy that's in the book? Wait, hold on.
Nope.
She had a different first name. I couldn't be that lucky. Hold on. I couldn't be lucky enough to have... Oh, no, it was Laurel Malloy. Well, maybe God aimed and missed. All right. This is from Denver, Colorado. Miracles do happen. That's what doctors said about 30-year-old Shannon Malloy. A car crash in Nebraska on January 25th threw Malloy up against the vehicle's dashboard. In the process, wait for it, her skull became separated from her spine. The clinical term for her condition, I swear to God, this is what they call it, is internal decapitation. She said, I just remember the impact and then thinking I had no control over my head, said Malloy. Dr. Gary Giselli said, Malloy is her will to live is what saved her. He said, I've seen it once before, and usually it ends badly. She said, quote, and this is while they were drilling that halo thing into her head. It's like that big metal headband, and it looked, it's like some huge monstrous retainer that you would wear in high school, like that goes over your whole head. Five screws were drilled into her skull and 10 more into her neck. She said, quote, this is really the money sentence here, this entire thing. My skull slipped off my neck 5 different times. I don't care what's happening in your day today. I don't care what's happened to you this morning. I don't care how your day is unfolding. I don't care what kind of luck you've had on this Friday. You're not this woman. And that is something you can thank the God or deity of your choice for. Every time they would try to screw this thing into my head, my skull would slip off my spine. They will continue to work on her swallowing and vision, which doctors refer to as challenging. There you go. Fantastic. That's how we're going to start today's Friday. Hello, it's 503-733-2970. I haven't even gotten to this thing about the world record for breastfeeding. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. If you ask yourself what else is coming up on this merry, whimsicality-based program today, I've got the news for you, my friends. Today we have the Young Immortals who are going to be in studio later on in the 2 o'clock hour. They're going to be doing a little... they're pimping. Would they have a show or something?
Yeah, they're playing a show tomorrow, a benefit show at the Hawthorne Theater.
Excellent. So they're going to be in the studio. They did that Hot for Sarah song that we played a few weeks back. They'll be in the studio today. A good friend, Cross Country Nate, for whom we've been planning an exciting transcontinental. It's a word like that. Cross Continental? Whatever. We've been planning a whole trip across the country for him. He's going to be in the studio today. By the way, you go to rickemerson.com right now. You can see the Google map of the trip that we have sort of created for him. The Rick Emerson audience has rallied together and created a very exciting itinerary for Cross Country Nate. You can see that at rickemerson.com. Our good friend Dave Lockman made that. He'll be in the studio with us today. Scott Daly from filmfeverradio.com is going to be in the studio today later on. I'm unclear about why, though. I think he's going to be. He hadn't even confirmed with me. I'm assuming he's going to be here. I'm not really sure what he's reviewing. I don't know what he's bringing to the table, if anything. He'll be here today. Gordon Fatboy from Rock 101 KUFO, our sister station, are preemptively trying to Welsh on the Transformers bet that they themselves made with us. So we'll talk to them later on in the program. We will. I haven't done, it's been, I don't know, about a week and a half since we did anything involving our hunt for the second worst story ever, because really, we didn't have any strong competitors. We didn't have anything that could contend with this man's penis caught in sawmill story. That did look to be the far and away champion. It seemed like we were going to have to hang the jersey in the rafters, and there was just nothing that could compare. Today, my friends, we have a challenger. So today we will endeavor to find the second worst story in the history of the world. What else? Jim Roop is going to join us to talk about Phil Spector. Steve Kastenbaum will be talking to us from New York City, where they're going to be having a presidential debate on Sunday, I think it is. I think it's a Democratic debate. Is that right? Yeah, Democratic debate happening in New York City on Sunday. And we'll talk to Ed McCarthy about supercalifragilisticexpreme tuberculosis. No, I screwed it up. I dropped a syllable again. Supercalifragilisticexpreme. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious tuberculosis. That's what it is. You do it right after the ist. And just in case you want to steal this joke and use it on the a morning show somewhere. All right, whatever. So we got that. All of that is coming up. What else is he talking about? Ed McCarthy's having tuberculosis and something else.
Oh, and
Jack Kevorkian.
Yes.
Because Jack Kevorkian, I think, and Tim Riley was claiming that Jack Kevorkian's first victim was in Portland. Is that true?
Yes, it was a Portland lady.
Now, was it somebody, did it take place in Portland, or was it just somebody who was from here? Did he kill somebody within the city limits of Portland?
I'll have to look into that.
All right, fantastic. All right, so that's all coming up later on. There you go. That's it. Oh, yeah, and Scotty is telling me the other stuff we got to get to. Hopefully, if we have time, we will audition a few other people for the Be Tim Riley for a Day and a Half contest, which is happening next week because of OMSI, Body Worlds 3, for which we are giving away tickets. Go to 970.am to find out how you can become an AM 970 Glorious Bastard and perhaps score yourself some tickets to the OMSI walkthrough. We got a Geek Watch coming up today. You see what I mean? It's 11:12. Right now, and already this program is dangerously overpacked. It's overstuffed. It's crowded. It's immense. It's swollen. The large, throbbing, pulsating bag of comedy is what it is. Hi. 503-733-2970. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How are you today?
Without my microphone.
Yeah.
How are you?
It's your best day ever.
I'm fine.
Uh-huh.
Stop saying it's my best day ever, because you're going to make it bad.
I'm going to make it bad.
I've had a good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I had a good bike ride in. Did you ride your bike?
I did. I've been riding my bike every day. Been riding my bike without fail. Riding my bike constantly, without ceasing, with no break in the action.
All right, I'm going to check the parking lot for your car.
No turning back. No, I biked in today, you damn woman.
Get off my back.
It's not my fault someone used your headphones. It's not.
I know, it makes me feel all weird. And it's bizarre. It's not even anything. They haven't been adjusted.
Let's hope they didn't have ear mites.
Ugh. They haven't been adjusted or anything. I can just tell that they were on somebody else's head.
Yeah.
It's
think
gross.
About the other heads that work in this studio.
Whoever you are, don't touch my headphones.
You know, but it's your fault for leaving those things in here.
But I hide them behind the little curtain thing.
Clearly not. Clearly, there's a difference between that. Hiding is when somebody doesn't find something. Clearly, you just set them behind the curtain.
I don't understand. Is it just the board up for Lycus, and then are there more people overnight?
I don't know. I'm not saying there's any number of people that come in and out of this building. There are people who work in KUFO. There are people who do production down the hall. Who knows where they go rooting around to find a spare pair of headphones to put on their greasy, unwashed head.
Ew.
Right here. Wait, and Scotty. Scotty, my pens keep disappearing. That's what I'm saying.
Scotty is such a freak about his pens.
Yeah. Don't even get me started on pens. There was, I swear to God, and I know this happens at the building where you work, whatever it is you do for a living. Everybody here at CBS Radio came in today and opened up their email box, and we found a whole chain of emails, but like seriously, like 15 emails back and forth about, I swear to Christ, a pen. A ballpoint pen that someone found laying on the carpet outside the upstairs conference room, which then started an entire chain of emails back and forth. I found a ballpoint pen laying on the carpet outside the conference room, but this pen belongs to you. Please contact me.
Oh, my God, you're right. I'm opening it right now.
And then there's like 10 emails back and forth discussing the nature of the pen, who the pen might belong to, where did the pen come from, what's to become of the pen. Like it's a lost Maltese or something that they're trying to put up for adoption. All I'm saying is this. I'm just saying, I don't leave anything in the studio that I don't want somebody rubbing their greasy body all over. You leave it in here, I just assume that somebody... Like, here's the thing. If I ever screw up and leave my coffee cup in here overnight, if I leave my headphones in here, I give everything a good scrubbing. Anything that I accidentally leave in this studio overnight, the next day I came in, I give it a good all-over washing before I let it touch anything of my body. I know the kind of people who work in radio. I am one of the people who works in radio. I know how frequently people who work in this room bathe. That is to say, almost not at all. That's all I'm saying. So just don't
I take
well.
A shower daily.
Yeah, I know, but you're the exception that proves the rule.
I took a shower today.
You are the sole clean member of the Rick Emerson
Show. Saying that you didn't take a shower?
No, I didn't. I don't shower in the morning because I bike right in. There's no point. I shower at night. Because I have a shower in the morning and then I'm just going to come in all sweaty anyway. There's not much point in me showering if I'm... It's like showering right before you decide to go, you know, roll around on a big pile of mud and leaves out back. It's just pointless. Did you shower because the Young Immortal guys are coming in?
No, I totally forgot that they were and I look like crap today. I was going to look all cute and...
You still
it's just
look
not
cute,
happening. I feel a little dumpy.
All right. I'm trying to be nice to you, and I'm trying to lift your mood, and it's not happening.
I'm in a good mood.
Like rolling a rock up a hill.
I left my coffee in the other room, too.
Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today. Hello, Tim.
Hello. An Oregon man with measles flies to Japan, spreading his plague to fellow passengers.
I'm sorry, I don't know why that's funny. It just is.
Were Hillsboro sex slaves willing participants?
Yes.
A lawyer says yes. Larry King kisses Nancy Reagan on the lips. You had to see it.
Did she suck out his soul? Was there, when she did that, was it like the movie Life Force where there's a lot of...
shocking.
And then you just both enjoyed it.
Okay. Celebrity you would least want to kiss. Go, Sarah.
Oh, gosh.
Just a celebrity right now, just in terms of just the physical appearance and vibe.
Bob Barker.
Really?
I wouldn't want to kiss him.
You wouldn't let Bob Barker give you a peck on the lips? Come on. It doesn't have to be
right,
tongue,
maybe.
But I mean a lingering.
Well, that's a callback to yesterday, Bill Paxton.
You wouldn't let Bill Paxton give you just sort of a...
No, him and his creepy,
on the mouth.
Mushy lips? No.
All right.
Sorry, I don't like him.
Okay.
Why, who would you not?
Are we talking female celebrity that I would not want to kiss?
I guess we are. And why are we talking about this?
Well, just because the idea of Larry King, I guess this is not, I thought this was a funny bit and now it's just going nowhere. It was just the idea of Larry King kissing Nancy Reagan. I guess I'm just going to say Nancy Reagan. All right. Is that the, are we teasing other things or are you going to go out of the Nancy Reagan thing?
Sergeant Peppers is 40. And the new National Spelling Bee champ had no problem spelling the word seraphine.
Seraphine? I don't even know what that is. The spelling bee kids are freaks. FM. All right. And in your face, loser spelling bee person from Tiger, whoever you were. All right. There you go. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email today. It is Rick at rickemerson.com. All right. What else? And I got to say this preemptively, by the way. You sons of bitches. I will not be bicycling on Monday. Let me just get it out of the way right now. You just need to, don't call. Call Monday if you really feel like you absolutely have to, but Monday, I will not be bicycling. Monday, I will be sticking it to the retarded. What? Yes, what?
You might want to rephrase that. Monday, I won't be bicycling because I'll be sticking it to the retarded.
No, not because of. I'm saying, no. Let's get this in order. It's not that I'm not bicycling because I'm sticking it to the retarded. That implies that I'm not even coming to work. I'm just spending all day at a hospital somewhere. I am sticking it to them by not bicycling. So that's happening Monday. So just so you know, so you can prepare your Abika, because I got things.
You got things that are more important than helping mentally retarded people? You have a haircut or something.
I don't have a haircut. I get off my back. I'm like, what are you saying about my hair? I'm like 2 weeks late for a haircut, yes. So I'm getting my haircut tomorrow. No, I am, I hesitate to even say it because it is going to open up a whole thing. So I'm going to see my new shrink on Monday. I kicked my old shrink to the curb. And I'm refusing to pay my bill out of principle, by the way. I'll eventually buckle down and do it, but I'm making them really hound me for it. I'm gonna wait until the moment that they absolutely, and I wonder.
No, they tack on all those extra fees and stuff.
No, I've checked. The bill hasn't gone up. And I'm waiting to see if they'll ever send me to collections. Let me just say this. It's not like I'm one of those guys who refuses just to pay bills on principle. I mean, I'm an upstanding individual. If I receive a service, I typically pay for it without incident. But you know what? This really was some of the worst shrinking I've ever received in my life. Really, some of the worst service I've ever received. Period. And B, they sort of swindled me by telling me it was going to be covered by my insurance, and then screwing me at the last minute and telling me it wasn't. They sort of sprung it on me after the fact, after I'd gone to this shrink who helped me not at all for a couple weeks. Then it was, oh, by the way, bam, it's not covered. You owe us hundreds of dollars. So I'm digging in my heels, and I'm not paying just a matter of principle. I do wonder if a shrink would ever send you to collection, though, because you got to figure that will push any number of their patients over the edge into suicide. So I wonder if shrinks are a little nicer when it comes to hounding people for a bill. Because, I mean, you lean on some of those patients too much, and they're just going to snap like a dry twig. So, anyway, I'm going to wait until they absolutely, like, send some guy to my house to break my legs before I pay it. I'm going to make them chase me down as much as they possibly can.
So how did you find this new shrink?
I went the other way, and I'm not going to get a whole thing about it, but everybody knows, so I went to this shrink, a couple months ago. and it was just a waste. But the guy claimed, again, that it was sort of covered, and it ended up not being, so I'm out hundreds of dollars for it. So I did it the other way, where I actually just went to, like, the guy who runs my, whatever, my health plan, and I'm like, hey, I'm crazy. Who won't charge me? And who can I go to that is covered? And he, you know, and it's that... God love him. It's that thing where they said, well, okay, here's a guy that's covered, and this is within your plan. How do you feel about 9 weeks from now? And so that was like 2 months ago. So it's actually just now coming up. I made this appointment literally 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks ago. So Monday, but it's in, attention, Tim Riley, it's in Clackamas. So there you go. Going to a Clackamas psychiatrist on Monday. So that'll be fun.
In Clackamas?
In Clackamas. In Clackamas at 4 o'clock. So that's going to be a fun... So there's just no way. I have to... So... Anyway, so there you go. Maybe the retarded can bill Kaiser. Maybe the retarded can just bill my insurance company for this. For me not helping. So no, I will not be helping the Special Olympics on Monday. So everybody should have to be okay with that.
Because you'll be helping Rick Emerson instead.
That's what I'm saying. It's going to maybe take a little me time. I'll be taking some personal time. Taking a personal day. And there you go. That's pretty much it. We got a few... Oh, and I'm not going to Great White, by the way. So just people have been asking
really?
Me... I can't.
I wanted to hear a full recap of Tool.
Here's the thing. It's going to put me back in Portland at like 2:30 or 3 in the morning. And that's if I drive. My only other option is to camp in Tootle, and I just can't bring myself to do it. There's just no... Although I do have to say, Dave Zinn came by my office and he said, so is Rick Emerson going to be going to see Great White in Tootle on Friday? And, you know, and I said, no, I just don't think I can do that. I don't think I can bring myself to drive for an hour and a half to see a band that's going to go on late, who's going to do a lackluster performance of their greatest hits, which I've already seen done better at some point in the past, which is going to, you know, and then I'm going to have to get back on the road with a bunch of drunken idiots. I'm also missing a taillight, so I'm probably going to get pulled over either there or on the way back, and because you know that the cops are going to be sitting there speed trapping it or trying to catch people who are drunk driving. And I was just like, you know, I don't want to camp in Tootle. I also don't want to drive back to Portland at 3 a.m., so no. No, Dave Zinn, I will not be going to see it. And he just kind of, he walks off. And this is the best line of the week, by the way. So I'm sitting
there. Always from Dave Zinn.
I'm sitting there and I'm typing away in my computer. He comes back and he sort of stands my doorway for a second and he goes, you know, Rick, it's not good white. It's great white. And then he just shakes his head sadly and like shuffles off. So there you go. That's the line of the day. It is not good white, kids. It's great white. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. I don't think we have time to do nothing else, right?
We have somebody at 11:45. So we can go.
Do we have somebody at 11:30?
No.
I swear to God.
Did you give me two pieces of paper?
I did. Steve Kastenbaum, 11:30.
I'll have to call Laura.
Why don't you call Laura about that? All right, let's take a break, kids. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up, Steve Kastenbaum, maybe. Also, Ed McCarthy.
Why are you looking at me like I'm doing something wrong?
I'm not saying anything.
I had to deal with Laura right. Today, too.
Uh-huh.
She was like, you mean you don't want to talk about check conversion?
Anything else you want to get off your chest? This is your final chance before the show really starts.
And I feel bad because my bike was in here and Tim spilled his coffee everywhere.
Yeah, Tim's pants are covered in coffee now. The key is to stay in dimly lit rooms all day, Tim, then nobody will notice.
Well, the best part is they're white pants.
Bam! And we're out. Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. Later on, the noon news hour with Tim Riley, who's covered in liquid. What else do we have? Jim Rube coming up later on. Cross Country Nate in studio. The Young Immortals in studio. Scott Daly. Gordon Fatboy. The second worst story ever. We'll get to almost none of these things. Let's welcome now from New York City, CNN radio correspondent. Oh, I'm sorry. You're in Manchester today. I didn't even realize that. I'm a fool. I thought this was actually happening in New York. From Manchester, New Hampshire, Steve Kastenbaum. Hello, sir.
Hey, how are you? Yeah, you're ahead of the debates coming up.
I guess for some reason, I had just like a short circuit in my brain, and I was thinking it was actually in New York. But it's is it Sunday night? And this is what is it? It's the Democrats on Sunday, and then the GOP is what, Tuesday?
The Democrats, you're right, will be debating Sunday night on CNN, and then Tuesday night it's the Republicans, and we'll be carrying that live on CNN.
And now, is this going to be another one of those things, because there was, I remember watching that GOP debate at the Ronald Reagan Library, or watching the segments of it later, and I swear to God, there was like 40 guys up there.
You know, there's 8 Democrats and 10 Republicans taking part in this. Can you believe that?
Here's a really dumb question. What do you have to do to qualify to get on to be one of these debates? I mean, can you just be, I don't know how it is where you live, but here where you get, you get your ballot, and it's like the National Republican Green Socialist, Pink Elephant
right.
Party or whatever. I mean, how do they determine who's sort of popular enough or who has a fair enough chance to get into one of these debates?
Well, that's an interesting question because, the folks in the political desk at CNN get together with the people at WMUR, which is the local TV station here in Manchester that is co-hosting the debate with us, and they also get together with a local newspaper here, and they extend an invitation to all of the candidates who they believe are viable presidential candidates. And, they're obviously not going to invite somebody like this guy. I don't know if you heard about him, but former wrestler Jeff Lobsterman Costa, who's a guy from, quote, the Crustacean Party in Nashua, New Hampshire.
Oh, come on! How can they not invite him?
He'll be outside, probably, shouting that they didn't invite me.
I didn't even care about Jeff Lobsterman whatever until you told me that they wouldn't invite him, and now I demand that he be allowed to... I got to tell you, I still have tacked up in my home office. In my office at home, I still have tacked up a placard from Portland, one of the Let Ralph Nader debates.
Okay.
Because, remember when they shut that guy out a few years ago? Because, let's be honest, because Ralph Nader's smart enough, he makes everybody on the stage with him look like a moron. And so now I'm going to add up a Let Lobster Man debate thing right next to that. From the Crustacean Party. Come on. Does no one have any sense of political theater anymore?
I'm not sure what their platform is. Maybe more butter with lobsters. I'm not sure at all.
I would think it's don't eat us. I would think that's their plan. I would think it's no butter. I would think it's no butter, no cooking, no killing, no death.
There you go. Oh, they're anti-edible crustaceans. I see.
That is fantastic. See, and it's moments like that where the spirit of, a guy like Abby Hoffman sort of lives on. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So, fantastic.
But then you've got guys like, Kucinich, who's still in it.
But that's just as dumb. That's just as... I hate to jump all over you like this. But you know what? I got to tell you this. The lobster guy has just as much chance of winning as Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich is never going to win anything. He's never, ever, 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 ever going to be elected to the vice president of the presidency, and everybody, and I would wager even the people of CNN know that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm sorry.
It's interesting though because he's got this hardcore following, and they're sort of like the geeks on college campuses rally around him for some reason, and I'm not sure where that connection was made and when and how. I mean, I know he did a lot of stuff early on with the internet when he was running the first time, so that might have something to do with it. But he's got this hardcore following that is so passionate about him that I don't know, just seems more real than some of the other candidates who have a more viable chance of winning.
He does seem real, I'll tell you. I'll give you that. He also his followers also seem a little crazy. I'm not trying to knock the guy. I'm really not. I'm just saying, from a real politic point of view, as Henry Kissinger would say, the guy just has no chance. He's never going to win.
Right.
Not unlike our friend Ralph Nader, who I think, regardless of where you stand in the political spectrum, we can all agree is a phenomenally intelligent man, and a pragmatic man in many ways, but who, of course, just had no chance of winning the election. So there's so the Democrats are Sunday, and of course this is now there was some talk. And I guess you probably didn't come to anything, but there was some talk about how some of the candidates were skipping some of the debates, I think, early on, or maybe as time went on. Now, are all the big players going to be there on Sunday? In other words, all the headline acts that people care about?
Yeah, they are. And the thing is, New Hampshire's primary, the first in the nation always, is more than 7 months away. So folks here... have been more or less in unison when they tell me that they've already had enough of the candidates. They're all over the state. One guy said, you can't get a decent cheap meal at a diner without being interrupted by some politician these
right.
days. So, but the magic number here in New Hampshire, with the state polls, is when you can get into the two-digit ratings when asked, who are you going to vote for? If you can get over 10%, that seems to be a magic number for extending the campaign into the months beyond New Hampshire. So, with the Democrats, it's Hillary Clinton, Edwards, Obama. In fact, Edwards is inching out over Obama.
I don't understand that. Do you have, to whatever extent you as a journalist can weigh in on this, I don't understand the increased buzz about John Edwards. Do you suppose that there is increased buzz about John Edwards as such, or is that there is decreased buzz about Obama, and it's just registering as increased buzz for Edwards?
I think it's a combination. You know, Edwards has recently ramped up the talk about helping out the poor in the nation, and I think that resonates with a lot of Democratic voters, people who do go out and vote and who've been voting for a long time. He has become, in his speeches, more liberal this go-around than he was the last time he was running for president. And there is a segment within the Democratic Party that feels that Hillary Clinton is not liberal enough. They were hoping Al Gore would be the man, but now that Edwards seems to be picking up the cause of liberalism, they're latching on to him. And I think that might be taking a little bit away from a Barack Obama.
What is the sense, just to get a little bit off track, what is the sense about Al Gore and he's eventually jumping in or not?
You know, we still don't know. He is holding his cards. He says, I have no interest in running for president right now. But you got to think, you know, he's thinking about it strongly. And so are the people that put up the money for the movie, An Inconvenient Truth.
Can I just tell you my nightmare scenario? Just the worst scenario I can possibly imagine is Al Gore getting into the election, getting into the race, because you know, well, I mean, there's a possibility that if Gore got into it, I mean, I guess you could think that he might ally himself with Obama or maybe even Hillary. But the worst scenario to me is Gore getting in and then it becomes a Gore-Edwards ticket. Because then that's just the least interesting. It just seems like, I mean, just even thinking about that makes me tired. I mean, it just makes me sleepy, the idea of Al Gore and John Edwards running for president on the ticket together. It just, I mean, it's like taking a Nytol.
And it's really the Democrats on the West Coast, particularly the really liberal people within the party, the active liberals on the West Coast, who are pushing for a Gore candidacy. They're the ones who really don't feel that Hillary Clinton is liberal enough for them, and they feel that Gore is the guy. And then there's this, what I see is a wild card, Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, arguably is the most qualified of all the candidates to run the United States, especially when it comes to foreign policy. You know, the guy's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize several times. He's been an ambassador several times. He's been special envoy to many nations, and he actually does have a pretty humorous commercial running right now where he's on a job interview and the guy's supposedly interviewing him about, you know, why he should be president, what qualifies him, and he runs down this resume, this list of what he's done. And it's a cute commercial, and we'll see if things turn around for him. You know, things have turned around on the Republican side for Mitt Romney, and all of a sudden here in New Hampshire, he's polling at 17%. Richardson right now is down around 4%. If he can get his digits up within the next couple of months into the two-digit range, you know, he'll start reeling in bigger money donors, and he could be a factor. He could be that one, you know, around the last turn that can pick up.
Bill Richards has got such a low profile. The one, I mean, he is an interesting candidate, and also there's some variables. He is, maybe I'm wrong about this, I believe he would be the first Latino to run for president, would he not? Or I guess if he's running now, he already is?
I'm not sure if he's the first Latino to run, but he would certainly be the first Latino to be president of the United States,
All right. It's just going to continue to get more and more chaotic as things unfold. So that is happening Sunday. By way of a plug, what time does that air for us Pacific Coast people?
Well, we're going to have on CNN Radio 6:30 Eastern time, so that would be 3:30 on the West Coast, a pre-debate show, and then the debate starts at 7 o'clock at St. Anselm College here in Manchester. Yes, and then the Republicans on Tuesday. We can talk about the Republicans on Tuesday.
Oh, and we will. We will, my friend. All right, Steve Kasima, enjoy your weekend. Have some sap or whatever they do there.
I'm not sure what they do in Manchester.
I don't know. I think they just sit around and look smug and wear tweed.
You know, they don't have a seatbelt law here. I just found out it's the only state in the nation where it's not mandatory to wear a seatbelt in the car. What's up with that?
Well, it's part of that live free or die thing.
Ah, okay.
All right. Enjoy your weekend, Steve.
Thank you.
Steve Kastenbaum in Manchester.
New Hampshire. All right, there you go. 503-733-2970. Let's see. What do we... we got what? Not Dick Giuliano. Ed McCarthy coming up in a couple, right?
About, mm-hmm.
Can we... I hate to... let me stop.
You all right?
No, just there's so much to do.
We
so
do have
to
a
do.
Lot to do.
So little time. Can I just talk about the tuberculosis guy? Have you seen his wife?
No.
God damn, she is hot as balls. Just go look.
I hate it when you say that.
You don't. You love it. You love it. Admit you love it. Admit
I
it now.
Don't. I don't. I don't find it hilarious as, like you do.
It's completely hilarious. You know that that's true. Let's.
Where do I find the story?
I'm looking right now. Go to drudgereport.com. Drudge. Report, drudgereport.com. It's him and his wife. First of all, does that not look like a still from a Hollywood movie or soap opera? And check out that wife of his.
Even well, all you can see are her eyes.
No, that's not all you can see, sir.
Oh, good Lord.
I mean, come on. Now, look.
She could have, like, big horse teeth underneath
you
that.
Know she doesn't, though. I mean, look, here's the thing. Look, I hate to sound creepy. I hate to sound like I'm that Jack in the Box commercial where I'm pointing at the different cuts of the cow. But, I mean, check out the hair. The eyes, the even skin tone where she's got like that even all over tan, and then check out what we might refer to gentlemanly as her general body type and curves. You know that she's hot. You can totally, you don't even need to see. If she's, here's the picture. It's the TB guy who kind of looks like Ben Affleck will play him in the movie. And then it's the TB guy posing with his wife, and she's wearing, like, a hospital mask, effectively like a veil. You know that she's hot underneath.
I'm going to try and find another picture of her.
No, I did. It looks like sort of a, the men in the audience will know what I'm talking about here. She kind of looks like a vivid girl, if you know what I mean. So, she kind of has that look. So go check out the hot wife of the TB guy. Anyway, there you go.
You're so weird.
I'm not weird at all. You know it's true. And I will guarantee you this. I haven't spent a lot of time on the internet in the last day or so. I've been busy with other stuff. I will guarantee you, as they say in Kennewick, if you go to a lot of message boards or comment blogs or, you know, whatever the kids are using now about this tuberculosis story, I'll guarantee you half the comments are about how hot his wife is and about how she might be single sometime in the near future. Bam! It's 503-733-2970, but hold your calls because we've got Ed McCarthy. Ed McCarthy joining us now from the CNN Center in Atlanta, where life is a little slower, a little mellower. It's Ed McCarthy. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Rick?
I'm dandy. By the way, how close to... here's a dumb question. How close to Atlanta, Georgia is New Orleans or Narlands?
New Orleans is probably about 8 or 9 hours away.
So are you familiar with that part of the country, though? How familiar are you with New Orleans?
Oh, very familiar, because I was down there, before Katrina, after Katrina, following that.
At some point, you and Sarah Dillon should talk or email or something. Sarah is going to be in New Orleans in a couple weeks, just spending a few days there with a friend of hers. So you might have some, you might have recommendations for things to do, places to eat, watering holes, stuff to look at, whatever.
So. Whatever is open, you know, a few more things continue to open down there, so that's good news. Well, of course, you said that you were not going to go down there.
Me? It's not that I'm not going to go down there ever. I mean, my wife went, she loved it, she thought it was fantastic. I'm really of two minds on it because what I heard, maybe this is wrong. I'm under the assumption, whatever. It seems to me that like I'm reading a lot of how they're going to rebuild a lot of the things that were destroyed to look like the way they were before. And in a way, I almost don't want them to do that. In a way, having them rebuild New Orleans and the sort of very the places that were heavily trafficked by tourists, rebuilding them to the way they looked before Katrina is almost, it almost makes me not want to go, because then it's like you're going to like a little Italy in New York, which is a thing that is sort of an artificial construct.
Yeah,
you know, I almost want to go see it, I don't want to sound cheesy, but I want to see like the organic, real New Orleans, as opposed to something that is now going to be recreated as basically like a theme park, where they're trying to replicate the way it looked before.
Well, you know, if they want to replicate something, they can replicate some of the homes down in certain areas that you know, they haven't done anything with yet, and the money's not been forthcoming for any of this repair work.
Yeah, that's hard to believe. I'm sure we're all stunned that the government didn't follow through. Here's a dumb question, doesn't it? And I know we're off the subject, but doesn't FEMA, I mean, like,
Here's what am I trying to say? When the government says, like, hey, we're going to get you sufficient monies for the state to rebuild these destroyed areas, I guess that's the sort of thing that they're not legally required to do. That's just one of those sort of gentlemen's promises that I guess they're not, they don't really have to follow through on, that there's really nothing you can do, right?
Well, what I'm getting the impression is that the money from the government went somewhere, but it just didn't get from point B to point C. That's the impression I'm getting. It all went to Baton Rouge. Mississippi didn't have any trouble with their federal money.
Yeah. It's just, the whole thing is just, I mean, it really is just emblematic of so much good and so much bad about this country. Let's talk about this tuberculosis guy. I'm so confused about this. So now I guess there has emerged some tape recording that the guy made with his lawyer before he even flew.
Yeah, exactly. And he says that he was given the clearance that everything was okay because he really wasn't that sick.
And so, so where is he now? I mean, is he in a hospital?
He is. He's at a hospital in Denver, Colorado, and that is where the CDC and this hospital will be working to give him care. We're just having a briefing right now with the head of CDC, and, of course, they're trying to dance around the question of how did this whole thing happen if he was told not to fly.
And he wasn't even supposed to get into the country, was he? He came from Canada.
As a matter of fact, he flew to France, and then was in Italy, and finally they told him, well, you better stay there. But he said if he had to wait for them to get in touch with him, meaning the CDC, he said he would have been dead.
Right.
So, you know, there's two sides to this story, and, you know, whether or not government incompetence came into play, which we know it did with the border situation, where his passport was flagged and he was allowed to get through, and now this guy's on administrative leave. You know, and this was on the 12th of May, and I'm thinking, you know, we flew out on the 13th, and I'm thinking, what about the people who are in the airport terminal? Do they not count?
Right.
All they seem to be talking about are the people that are on the flight with him, but, you know, he's got to be milling around in the atrium of the Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. And, you know, being very close to other people or perhaps even lined up waiting to get through TSA screening.
No, you know, while you're sitting there waiting to buy a sandwich and there's some guy coughing up a lung behind you, you know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I hate to be morbid about it, but we always talk about it. You're on a plane, you're in a metal tube breathing the same air that everybody else is breathing. You'll get off, you're at the bathroom, there's some guy coughing while he's washing his hands next to you, somebody hacking up while he's buying an Odwalla right next to you in line at the convenience store.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is all going to end in lawsuits. That sort of is a given at this point, right?
He says, excuse me. He says, I didn't know I was Flemish.
Yes. Okay. Thanks. Hey, real quickly, also, the other story that you're talking about today, which is a big thing, is Jack Kevorkian.
He's out. Spent 8 years in prison. It was actually a maximum security prison. He came out. And the reason I figured out that there weren't going to be any interviews was because the van he was supposed to be getting into, from that van, the door opens wide, and who jumps out? Mike Wallace.
Really?
And gives him a big hug. So I said, well, there go the interview chances there now, because this will be just 60 minutes exclusive.
Do you know if he's still got Jeffrey Figer as his lawyer? He was...
No.
That's too bad. I love that guy.
Yeah, he does not. Former attorney. He's got another guy now who's he's pretty sharp guy as well. But, you know, I think this is one of those situations where Kevorkian now says, you know, he's not going to, you know, get involved in assisted suicide, but he'll work to change the laws. Well, I suppose if he did a stretch of 8 to 10 in the federal pen, you decide that you want to, you know, maybe give it up because prison is not your lifestyle.
How old is he now?
79.
So, he's, you know, and here's the thing, and history will decide, I guess, how to judge Jack Kevorkian. I suppose that you could, and I hate to say things like this because this sounds like some just sissy, wishy-washy talk radio host thing to say, but I guess I can see kind of both sides of the issue, but I will say this. I will say that the thing that Jack Kevorkian did is, you know, he, for better or worse, he did sort of put that issue center stage. And I think he did a lot to make people, this is a tired cliche, but I think it really is true. I think he really did force a national discussion.
He did.
On whether you get to choose how you die and when you die, or whether the state can just force you to sit and wither away and to bankrupt your family in some hospital while you're, you know, where you're taking 15 years to die of some horrible disease. So
that's right.
You know, and here in Oregon, you know, we were the first state, I think, in the union to pass an assisted suicide law. And I think states that look at those things now, I mean, for better or worse, I mean, you got Jack Kevorkian to thank for those. So.
You do. And, of course, you put the Hemlock Society on the map because they got a lot more notoriety, I think, after the fact.
Absolutely. And, I mean, so he did, Derek Humphreys, who from the Hemlock Society, actually, I think, you know, he has said something like that. That he, for better or worse, Jack Kevorkian made the point. So you can't ask for more than that than to make your point in a pretty vivid way like that.
That is correct.
All right, my friend.
I have to agree with that.
Big plans for the weekend?
Actually, no. Maybe a little golf on Sunday, but that's about it, I think.
All right. Well, enjoy your days off when it comes Sunday and Monday. Say hi to Kathy. We will talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
You
have a good weekend.
See you soon, my friend. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. There you go. Fantastic. It's 503-733-2970. Rick. About the TV guy's wife, and how great that's just going to be her name forever. That's just going to be what she's known as. Let's see, about the TV guy's wife. Yes, but did you see her on television when they went to a close-up? She looked hideous. I don't know. I haven't seen the... Oh, wait, hold on. TV guy's wife, better picture. Well, let me click now.
Ooh, I couldn't find one.
Let me look at it in real time. Well, okay, but this is unfair. She looks bad in this photo, but it's the expression she's making. It's not her face. It's that they've done the National Enquirer thing. They've caught her, I think, mid expression. She's crinkling up her face, though.
Yeah, she's cute.
She's totally hot. All right, there you go. Fantastic. All right, well, we should probably break here. Tim Riley coming up at the top for the Ministry of Truth at the noon news hour. Later on, CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop, Scott Daly, Corden Fatboy, the Young Immortals, Cross Country Nate, and more. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. We are back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, seeing a radio correspondent, Jim Roop, Cross Country Nate, the Young Immortal, Scott Daly, Corden Fatboy. But first, ladies and gentlemen, will you please put your working class hands together for the Reverend Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid States Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Dr. Death is going home. Jack Kevorkian has been released from a Michigan prison after 8 years. Speaking outside the prison walls, Dr. Death says he's thrilled about this.
It was wonderful. One of the high points in life.
He claims to have helped over 130 people die and has been in prison in Michigan on second-degree murder charges. He has pledged not to participate in any more suicides or to counsel others on how to end their lives. And because everything weird has a Portland connection, his first victim was from Portland. He assisted 54-year-old Janet Atkins to die on June 4th, 1990. Atkins, a middle-aged woman, like most of her clients, had Alzheimer's. She died in the back of his rusty Volkswagen van after using the doctor's suicide machine.
You know, and that was before assisted suicide was legal here.
Mm-hmm.
Because that actually wasn't legalized until, well, like, 95, 96?
This happened in Michigan.
With the Oregon woman?
Yeah.
What?
She went to Michigan.
Oh, I see. So it was like, he didn't travel to you in the death van. It was like you come here.
What was the suicide machine?
It was a carbon monoxide machine. To the best of my knowledge.
Bottles, chemicals, and tubing to inject deadly drugs.
Oh, really? Okay, so it wasn't carbon monoxide.
He later used a mask attached to a carbon monoxide supply.
There we go.
That was later.
Because carbon monoxide is typically, as I understand it, it's a pretty peaceful way to go, all things considered. So that was before assisted suicide was legal here, because I don't think that happened until late night. I don't know. And, you know, and people make so much out of the fact, I don't get no whole assisted suicide thing, because it's pretty much moot here anyway, because I can already see it happening, though. I can already see, like, the next 10 minutes of the show laid out in front of me, like some sort of a GPS preview of my destination, my itinerary. I was going to say this. People say that it's all kinds of creepy and whatnot, that you would, like, go and you get in the back of his rusty van and he, like, straps a carbon monoxide thing on you. But, I mean, what else are you going to do? There was no... I mean, it's still not legal most places.
I guess it was a thrifty way to get this done.
Well, and what else? I mean, as opposed to beating you to death with a rock. I mean, what is it that they expected him to do? Your only options were Dr. Kevorkian, who, again, was a doctor and had figured out something that did seem pretty foolproof, pretty painless, pretty simple, pretty peaceful, and that there was no option. There still, in most states, is no option. So if you're some guy just sitting there slowly half-lifing away from some hideous disease, you know, the state decides that it's their job just to keep you alive and suffering as long as they can possibly do it so they can wring money out of your family. So, you know, whatever. I mean, it's... But in Oregon, you know, they... And it is pretty notable, by the way, and very telling, that here in Oregon, you can do that, and I guess the federal government doesn't intervene, right? Because John Ashcroft tried to get up in our business, and they told him to go eat it.
Yeah.
So in Oregon... And I'm unclear about this, and maybe somebody knows this. I was... Strangely enough, I was just talking to my wife about this the other day, because she's, you know, she works with the infirm. And I was talking about assisted suicide. So... Does anybody know, and I don't wish to sound unbearably morbid about this, and it always does seem like these conversations...
Does anybody know any of his victims?
Happened on a Friday. No, I wasn't going to ask that.
Oh.
No, I was not going to ask if anybody knew any of his victims. I was going to say, does anybody know how they do it in Oregon when you go to the doctor and say, well, I've got the cancer, or the Lou Gehrig's or whatever?
I believe it's a combination of drugs.
Now, is it just like a...
Mix them together.
Is it, like, is it just a handful of pills, or is it like something where you've got to make a combination yourself?
I think you have to make the combination.
Here's my other question. Let's say you go to the doctor here in Oregon. I believe it's if you have six... I think it's like a hospice thing. I think it's if you have 6 months or less to live. I could be wrong about that. But let's say you go to the doctor in Oregon, and the doctor says, what seems to be the problem? And you say, well, I've got this cancer. And the doctor says, well, okay. And you say, well, I want the assisted suicide drugs. My understanding of it is the doctor gives you the assisted suicide drugs, but of course, you don't have to take them or take them in the presence of anybody. You just have them in case. It's sort of a break glass in case you decide you've had enough of it kind of a deal. So, let's say the doctor gives you the assisted suicide drugs, you say thanks, you go home, and then either you decide to stick it out or you get hit by a bus the next day or something. What happens to those assisted suicide drugs? If you got them,
I think you only get enough for one shot at it.
But I know, but I'm saying, but what if you don't take them? What if the doctor gives you the assisted suicide dose, you put it in your medicine cabinet, and then you die of something else, or you just never use it? Where do they go? Does it just, like, sit around? So this is all the stuff it's all the stuff I wonder about. Let's see. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Just to let you know, your favorite part of Portland, that lady, the first one that died,
yeah.
She was from luxurious downtown St. John's.
Of course. Can't you just...
And,
if you want to die in St. John's, can't you just sort of go stand outside for a while and somebody will come by and take care of that?
Well, if you knew the people that I knew in St. John's, you would know. But, yeah, she brought a lot of pain to St. John's. So, good old North Portland.
Okay. Well, it's what we do. All right. Thank you. All right. It's what Portlanders do, sir. They bring esteem to their communities. All right. Well, anyway, here's Tim Riley.
You know, I was just reading about this. Self-administration is broadly interpreted. Lethal drugs do not need to be taken orally. So this death with dignity law is very intense.
It's I don't mean to seem creepy about it. I really am curious about that. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I know lethal injection is a pretty, like, in the prison, is a pretty complicated process where there's that huge machine they roll in and they give you three different syringes and there's three different sets of drugs and they're 2 minutes apart and whatever. And it doesn't seem like, especially if you're very sick, you don't have the ability to set that up. It seems like it has to be something that's very simple to take. It seems like it would have to be, like, here, take these three pills or whatever. Mm-hmm. Lars seemed to think it was some kind of actual suicide pill, like the kind that they supposedly give astronauts or whatever. You know what I'd do, just as a side note? If I had those, I would just put them in some sort of a... If I had the suicide pill, I would just wear it around my neck in some sort of gold screw top case, just to sort of leverage anybody trying to screw with me. I want you to come in and work overtime on Saturday. Nope, I'm not going to do it. I've got suicide pills right here. You can't make me come in. You try to make me work overtime, I'm going to kill myself right in front of you. Well, okay. I just carry those around just to screw with people. Just carry my suicide dose around my neck just to see how it affected people in conversations. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Rick. This is Luke. About 4 months ago or so, I guess more like six now, my dad died from cancer down around Corvallis. And he was talking about doing assisted suicide. As it turned out, he did it through hospice.
Right.
There was, with hospice nurse at a nursing home, they were able to give him drugs and coma, and then pretty quickly the disease took care of it on its own, but that way he was out for most of the process. What they said to us was that to do the assisted suicide, you go into the hospital, into a full-service hospital as an inpatient, and they give you a shot. I don't know what exactly the drugs are, if it's a cocktail.
Right.
But it's a whole mess of paperwork for you, for your next of kin, for the doctors, just to make sure everybody doesn't get sued, basically, I think.
So my question, though, is, so let's say you have a degenerative disease, 6 months to live, you have cancer, ALS, whatever it is, whatever's going to kill you. You go to the doctor, and you say, hey, you know, I'm not entirely sure, but I'm thinking I may just want to kind of end things myself on my own timetable. You fill out all the paperwork. Do you then, when you decide, like, well, today's the day, I'm just gonna kind of pull the ripcord today, do you have to go into the doctor and he does it, or do you go in and he hands it to you and you have to do it in front of him, or can you take it home?
No, it's a long process. I mean, we're assuming you're sick, the doctor, you're sick, you've been to the hospital, you're right. Probably in the hospital or going back and forth. It's a long process, talking to your doctor, talking to your family, talking to a shrink probably. It's not like you just up and go, wow, I've got cough, I don't like this, I'm going to die, let's talk to the doctor. It's a long process of the doctor telling you you're going to die and then
Taking
it over. And
What is the actual process or method by which, though, the patient actually ends things? Is it a pill? Is it a shot?
Well, I don't know for sure. The way my dad did it was not officially assisted suicide. They gave him drugs and put him into a coma.
Sure.
And then he died naturally while he was unconscious, so he didn't have to suffer as much. And let me tell you, it wasn't... I believe he was peaceful. For me and the rest of the family, it wasn't all that peaceful.
Sure, yeah.
But the way I understand it, for official assisted suicide, you're in a hospital room, and they give you a shot. And I believe, I don't know this because we didn't do it that way, I believe it's a little bit like execution.
Like a lethal injection kind of thing.
Lethal injection. Thank you, sir.
All right. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you for the call, my friend. I appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. You have a good day.
Thank you. There you go. That's Luke. All right. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
An Oregon man flies to Japan with the measles and infects several people along the way. Yes, he was visiting Japan, and he potentially exposed dozens of air travelers to the measles, along with more than 100 hospital patients, employees, and visitors in Eugene. He's not identified by officials, but he's in his early 20s. He flew back from Japan on May 22nd, changed planes in San Francisco so they could get it too. The man would have been contagious during those flights. Passengers could have been exposed to the measles, but public health officials have found that air travel historically does not pose a higher risk of spreading the disease.
I'm really dumb about this, so you'll have to fill me in. I don't even really know what measles are. It's a thing you get like a shot or something for when you're a kid, right? Don't you get like a polio? Not a polio thing, but a vaccination
Vaccination for measles.
Yeah. Now, is measles just like, in my head, measles is you're just covered in spots. Is that right?
Correct, yeah.
But what do they, I mean, what is
well,
it?
Well, the vast number of Americans, about 95%, have immunity to measles, either because they received two doses of the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine as children, or because they were born before 1957 and exposed to the virus.
I think measles is a funny word.
That is. It's right. Kind of a fun little sickness.
All right, let's see here. All right, well, I'm kind of getting a lot of email about this, whatever. Okay, apparently, let's see. A guy has emailed here just so I can get it. I hate not knowing things. I hate it's like an itch you can't quite reach. Okay, here we go. This guy says, Rick, in Oregon, the assisted suicide is done with a combination of pills.
That's what I thought.
And I had never thought about this, but this makes a lot of sense. He says they do it as a multi-pill combination. Anybody know why? No. Why it's multiple pills? This makes a lot of sense. It is a multi-pill combination to allow multiple chances to reconsider once you've taken the first one. So if you take it and you're like, well, no, then you won't die. So they are inert, I think, or at least not lethal, taken by themselves. You have to take a whole combination of pills for it to have the right effect. So it's like tumblers in a lock or whatever. All right, so there you go. So that makes sense. See, there you go. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Rick, how you doing, buddy?
What's
Quick
up?
Question for you. I was wondering maybe you could put it out to the listeners. I was wondering how much the copay on the doctor-assisted suicide would be.
I don't really know the answer to that, and I wonder if you have to pay in advance. Can I put this on my credit card?
Yeah, I know. And is it considered preventative maintenance, or is it?
All right, now you're just being unduly wacky. Now your wackiness has crossed the line into kookiness, sir. All right, thank you.
Well, that tends to happen from time to time.
Yes, it does. Thank you. That's one of those medical questions that I really do wonder, but there's no number you can call to ask that. Like, can you put assisted suicide on your credit card? I do wonder that, but, like, I can't call a hospital, and you can't feed your family with a codpiece, and you can't call a hospital and ask that question. Just like I always wonder if you buy boob implants on a credit card, or, you know, or whatever, or, like, on payments, installments, and you don't pay, do they come and take them back? I have always wondered about it, but there's no one to know.
Well, I think they push a little button like OnStar and deflate them.
Seriously. They just make one real lopsided. Just make one boob hang real low. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, for some 600 elementary school students looking on, it was supposed to be an exciting science demonstration. Instead, it turned into a frightful look at death.
Fantastic.
A teacher and a utility company worker in Othello, Washington, were suspended about 30 feet off the ground in a lift bucket. When the boom suddenly separated from its base, sending the bucket crashing to the ground, they were thrown from the bucket when it hit the ground outside of Hiawatha Elementary School.
Hiawatha.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
The teacher was hospitalized for treatment on what are described as non-life-threatening injuries. The guy in the bucket was killed. They were conducting their annual egg drop science demonstration at the school, dropping eggs in protective containers to see which ones didn't crack. However, the humans did.
I wasn't going to.
Several hundred school children were on the playground watching the event. The company and the Department of Labor will investigate. Meanwhile, of course, counseling has been brought in for the children.
Yes, yes.
Because they need it so badly.
You know, I was just going to say, there's nothing that warms the heart of this show more than when there's some sort of an experiment or demonstration for children that ends in something traumatic and scarring. Secondly, I don't remember a counselor. I don't mean to be turning this into another when I was a kid, but I don't remember counselors being brought in for jack when I went to school.
No.
I mean, really, there's nothing. I mean, kids died all the time in my school. Just constantly. It was constantly killed, children dying. And it was just sort of a, you know, Johnny used to sit next to you. Now it's Steve. And that was it. And then they, you know, and then he just moved on. That was it, man. All right, let's see. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, I think you may or may not have already answered this question before I dialed, but it's according to the Oregon government website here, it's a prescription for a lethal dose of a barbiturate. And so that's how there are other options, but that's the most requested. And kind of on a serious note, getting back to what a caller, your joke caller came in, actually the act does not, as it's written in Oregon government format, they will not release whether or not your insurance will pay for it, nor will they release how much it costs. But as far as your question goes about where does the medicine go, I have a cousin that looked into it that was suffering from latter stages of leukemia,
mm-hmm.
and I know that she was receiving, kind of rescinded, and she was receiving several telephone calls over the course of a week to her and other family members inquiring about the steps that she had taken. So but I'm sure that there's plenty of follow-up, and I'm sure that upon follow-up that they would want to know what happened to the dose.
I wonder if maybe you die, if you die of another... Boy, goddamn, we're morbid today. I wonder if you die of something else, or if you just elect not to use the lethal dose, if the government, if they do send like a hospice worker or something to sort of do an inventory of the drugs in your house and return them to the state, maybe if you haven't used them.
From what I understood, the way my cousin went through it, I mean, yeah, that's what, I mean, it didn't get to that point, but yeah, I mean, they were constantly following up with her and family. But now the family thing, where there's kind of a loophole where I see it, is that the family may or may not be involved. And this is, again, right there on the Oregon government website, that the patient actually decides, okay, I want so-and-so filled in on this, or I just want to go this alone. And then you can, either way, you can just walk in, get your prescription, and like you said, just go home with it.
That's so weird. I mean,
it is.
Don't get me wrong. It seems wrong to say I'm a big fan, but I mean, I am very much for, you know, my body belongs to me and the government should F off and let me do what I want. So I am a big supporter of you being able to do or not do whatever you want to do or not do. So I think this is great. It is just weird, though. I support it, but it is strange. It's just a very surreal concept.
The first day I ever listened to you was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and you were talking about your pro stance on euthanasia, and it actually prompted me to call in and go, finally, somebody gets it right. And so, anyway, that was kind of how I came around to being a Rick Emerson listener. So,
but I'm pro euthanasia. Rick, your strong pro death stance has made me a fan for life. I just, you know what it is? Here's my thing. People ask me, you know, Scotty one time accused me of being a Democrat, and I think I transposed my word. I think I said I was a Democrat, not a liberal. What I meant was a liberal, not a Democrat. But anyway, so somebody asked me if I was a Democrat, and I said no. And they said, well, what party are you a member of? And I, you know, I'm a member of the Leave Me the Hell Alone party. I'm a member of the Just Get Off My Back and Let Me Do What I Want With My Life party.
Well, and my parents raised me Southern Baptist, and I was raised in a very conservative family, but at the same time, as I got older and older, you know, right now I don't like either party, so I'm in this independent haze, and I don't know what to do, and, you know, 32, and adult, it's a weird place to find yourself.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that, my friend. All right, thank you for the call, sir. All right, there you go. That's a longtime listener there. He admires my strong pro-death stance. Here's Tim Riley.
Did you watch Larry King last night?
You already know the answer to this. This is one of those rhetorical radio questions.
Yes.
So, did you see the big game last night? And then I say no, and you go, did you miss out? No, we discussed this in the opening. This is the hymn. Now, did you see this live, or did you see it on the YouTube today?
I saw it live.
Did you know he was going to be kissing Nancy Reagan? They just sprung it on you?
Not on the cheek, on the lips. And both appeared to enjoy it.
Oh, it burns.
That was the last thing he did.
And then he died.
And then I had to play it back to make sure that I saw what I thought I saw.
I really just see. And you know what, just, I mean, just think about... Think about just the aesthetic. Just the sort
I
of,
mean, and her lips did stay on.
The sort of tactile.
At least.
Think about the sort of tactile and auditory sensation of Larry King kissing Nancy Reagan. I mean, it's just sort of like sandpapery toads rubbing their faces together. It's just sort of a. Here's what it sounded like. Sort of a. Oh, I can't even do it. I can't. I don't have any facial hair. I can't simulate the sound. But just sort of a lot of. Just sort of like dry sticks rubbing together. Was it a lingering kiss or was it just a...
It was a... on the lips.
Larry King. And I don't know who the more horrifying member of that equation is. Wait. I'm trying to picture Larry King kissing somebody hot. Okay, Larry King kissing Lauren Graham. Okay, hold on. Now I'm going to picture Nancy Reagan kissing somebody attractive. Nancy Reagan kissing Kiefer Sutherland. Yeah. Okay, it's Nancy Reagan. She's the one who grosses me out the most. Although I got to say, Larry King, no prize either.
I thought of mine. Donald Trump.
What?
Bad.
Oh, the celebrity you wouldn't want to be kissed by? You know Donald Trump is a messy kisser.
He totally looks slobbery.
You know, he gives you the tongue right away. He doesn't wait. You're like, you go to kiss Donald Trump. Not you, but someone who's been drugged goes to kiss someone who's 18 and drunk goes to kiss Donald Trump. That, you know, and they just do the slightly mouth lips kind of parted, and then he immediately he's immediately with the toad tongue. All right, yeah, no, it's Nancy Reagan. She's the worst part of that equation. God damn. Okay,
so she's on Larry King last night discussing the new Ronald Reagan diary book,
and then she also appeared on his show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She discussed her late husband's reputation as the last letter writer of our time, saying he really wasn't the email type.
But isn't it sad now that nobody writes anymore? I mean, this, of course, is a diary. That's out of the question. Nobody's going to do that.
Can I slide my reptilian tongue out between my dry, cracked, chafy lips?
And that's E. Reagan describes Ronald Reagan's relationship with Soviet leader Gorbachev.
Very good. I mean, from the moment they
can't wait to go on a break
with each other, there was a connection.
She said her late husband had a strong distaste for profanity and anything vulgar.
We ran a movie.
Sex through a sheet.
And he said it would have been all right, but it was pornographic. I forgot what movie. Officer and Gentleman.
Well, yes. Yes, it was pornographic. That's exactly what it. How did they ever have children? Oh, good God. No wonder their kids are so effed up. God, are there any normal kids in that Reagan family at all? I mean, there's Patty Reagan. Or Patty Davis, I guess she is, right? Yeah. She's Patty Davis. She's nutty. And then there's Ron Reagan.
Yeah.
And he's a dancer, right?
No, he hasn't been in years. They put a stop to that. They made him marry a woman. And now he hosts dog shows, I believe, on Animal Planet.
Really?
Yes.
Fantastic. We're going to force you to marry a woman, Ron, and we're going to force you to take off those dancing shoes now. You know, he used to be a pundit, too. He was like a talking head for a while.
Oh, on MSNBC.
Yeah.
They put him on a whole bunch of shows that nobody watched.
No, they tried to, you could tell they did everything they could to try to make him like a regular celebrity. Mm-hmm. And that just, he wasn't having any of that.
No.
And then, of course, there's Michael Reagan. God, the less said about that guy, the better. I think he's gone away, though. I think Michael Reagan and his excess of saliva, I think they've vanished. I don't think his show is even on anymore. Yeah, God, it's a terrible program. Constantly being guest hosted by Bob Dornan.
That's bad, too.
No, it was the worst. Bob Dornan and his big red clown face. Jesus, God. All right, do we have any more cuts from Nancy Reagan?
No, that's it.
That's too bad.
That's all you're getting.
Just picturing their tongues snaking
that
out of their mouths.
Embrace.
Intertwining as they hold each other, their various restraining undergarments girdling against one another. Just the smell. It's the smell of Polygrip and Brute. Jesus. I don't know why I keep playing it in my head, too. Right now, even as we're talking, I haven't even seen it. And I'm playing it over and over and over again in my head. It's the image of
I've never seen Larry King kiss anybody before.
Okay. You know, here's the other thing. The thing that freaks me a little bit about Nancy Reagan, apart from the fact that she's old and evil and bony and stick-like and a witch.
She may be listening now.
Have me killed. I don't think she has the juice anymore. I don't think Nancy Reagan can get me killed.
Well, she'll turn you over to Hillary. She still has the juice.
Probably. Because, you know, because Reagan's dead and Sinatra's dead. So I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's anybody left alive who owes Nancy Reagan any favors. Mm. Wasn't she married to somebody before Ronald?
Yes.
And wasn't he married too? He was married to somebody. It was the second marriage for both of them. What kind of Republican values are those? Was she? She had to have been. I think she had like a secret first marriage.
Oh, probably they'll have numerous.
The Hollywood people always had like they had secret first marriages in those days. Let's see. What was I going to say? Blah blah blah. Oh, she looks like my dead grandmother, which is another reason why she kind of freaks me out. And she always did. She kind of looks like my hideous crone of a grandmother. And didn't Ronald Reagan? Well, of course he did. I ask. This is another rhetorical question. I'm asking like I don't know. The fact that Ronald Reagan called her
mommy.
Hello, mommy. Married couples that call each other mom and dad, there's something really wrong with that. And I know that maybe that's a thing that just happens as you reproduce and have children and become a breeding suburban. I don't know. But there's something about married couples that refer to each other as mom and dad, mommy and daddy. My parents did it too, and it's just weird. So, all right. Okay. All I can picture is Professor Farnsworth and Mom from the Mom's Friendly Robot Company in Futurama just bumping their wrinkly nubs together. All right, here's Tim Riley.
I think I found a Nancy Reagan scene with a drugs thing.
Okay. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
There are no soft drugs or hard drugs. All drugs are dumb.
To learn more about cures and drugs, the Library of Congress suggests these books. Getting Tough on Gateway Drugs, The Gods of the Family, by Robert L. Zufan, and Not My Kid, A Parent's Guide to Kids and Drugs, by Beth Tolson and Dr. Nora Newton.
Well, now, see, now I have to look for this. Hold on a second. Now I have to look for something. In real time. Let's see. Let me just see if I have this. Real quickly. I believe I had bookmarked for just such an occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Reagan. All right. Hold on, let me see if I've got this here. Oh, I thought I had the Nancy Reagan appearance on Different Strokes. No, I guess not. Nancy Reagan's appearance on Different Strokes, where Arnold writes a touching letter, and then she appears in his classroom.
I remember that episode.
Yeah, and then she asks, and this is it.
No video found. She had it removed.
And they're like third graders, and she asks the kids in the classroom to raise their hand if they've experimented with drugs. I swear to God, like 80% of the people raised, 80% of the kids raised their hand. Rick and Tim, Larry King once kissed Marlon Brando on the lips in the bizarre final interview they did. I'm still scrubbing my brain 2 years later. Can I have a sample of your feces? Let's see. We should break. We shouldn't talk about this anymore.
Got out of prison.
We'll just let this, we'll let this scrub it away.
And I went to pick her up.
Country. All right. Here's what's coming up. Well, we've got phone calls here. We've got more from Tim Riley. We've got Jim Roop, the Young Immortals, Cross Country Nate, Scott Daly, all of that. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Friday. It's 503-733-2970. Don't go anywhere. We're back after this on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Stay there. Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Friday. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Still to come, Cross Country Nate in studio. The Young Immortals performing here. Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. Gordon Fatboy from Rock 101 KUFO about the Transformers bet, which they are attempting to change even before the movies come out. What else? Jim Roop from Los Angeles. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
A fundraiser for Hillary Clinton at a suburban Sacramento home was delayed nearly 3 hours yesterday by a protester. Stephen Percy brought a flying draped coffin to the event in Rancho Cordova in a way to express his displeasure with the senator's vote to continue funding the Iraq war.
You can't continue to fund the war unless you're also putting the troops in harm's way. So when she says that she doesn't want the war to continue or she doesn't like to have the troops in harm's way, you can't have it both ways.
So the Secret Service wanted to look inside the coffin, but he refused. Then the cops brought in a bomb squad. More than 100 guests were kept waiting until their host brought them into the house through a neighbor's yard. Clinton arrived a few minutes later. The event was scheduled to start at 6 o'clock.
Apparently everything now that they can't identify is a bomb.
Yes.
Anything they don't know what it is. It's an explosive. Blow it up!
Well, last week it was an iPod.
The iPod. You said something about how the iPod... I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh at this. Something about how the iPod can, like, turn your pacemaker off or whatever. The story that came out 2 weeks ago. Well, I can't wait to go jogging now that I've got my brand new pacemaker on my iPod to get 3 weeks, three blocks away from the house, and you keel over and die to the Doobie Brothers ticking along in your pocket. All right. This, by the way, okay, somebody sent me this. Who's heard the song Stop the Madness?
I have not.
Well, it's an anti-drug music video sponsored by United States President Ronald Reagan and the Reagan administration. The video starred... Oh, this is so great. I almost don't even want to play the video because it can't possibly be as good. I'm just getting little thrills of pleasure all through my being just reading this. Listen to who's in this music video, which I have not heard, by the way, nor seen. The video, first of all, because it's from the Reagan administration, Tim, what is the video about?
Drugs.
Yes. The video stars New Edition, and then it all goes downhill from there, by the way. New Edition, Whitney Houston, okay, holding steady there. LaToya Jackson, Kim Fields from The Facts of Life, David Hasselhoff, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Casey Kasem, Herb Alpert, and someone named Boogaloo Shrimp.
That sounds tasty.
Who I believe is a break dancer. Oh, and then Nancy Reagan's in it, too. Let's listen, shall we?
Yes.
This is Stop the Madness, starring David Hasselhoff and LaToya Jackson, and someone named Boogaloo Shrimp.
It's
says drugs on the screen in big letters.
I think I started drinking when I was 14, and I'm still drinking.
That's a good feeling.
Is that Nancy?
Yeah.
It sounded like this.
From a year to 25.
I had to drink every day just to be nice to Michael.
It's a temptation. It's a temptation.
That Herb Alpert right there. You know that's Herb Alpert. Okay, I want to know, by the way, this is just, this is a video so far, they're doing nothing but showing suburban white people doing drugs, because they know that's the only way that people who voted for Ronald Reagan would care about a problem. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a song here, I think it's just Herb Alpert. This video, by the way, is terrible.
As it should be.
Okay, we're almost 90 seconds into this song, and it's just a drum machine and Herb Alpert.
Nancy Reagan?
Oh. No, this is the new edition part. I gotta skip to the Hasselhoff part. Skipping. Oh, wait. No, is that him? Tell me what you're doing. No. Let's see. Nancy Reagan. God, the 80s were terrible. Okay, so this is like a
stop
pseudo...
the maggots now.
It's a pseudo We Are the World thing. Mm. And where they show all the performers in this video doing the We Are the World pose, standing behind one big microphone, headphones on, and then like one hand pushing one headphone cuff to their ear. Nancy Reagan among them, clearly not singing but lip syncing. I just view that David Hasselhoff is even in this song. I'm fast-forwarding. There is no David Hasselhoff. I'm not even going to play the radio. There's no Hasselhoff. There's no reason for me to play it. Here's Tim Riley.
No Hoff?
No. There's no Hoff, no song.
Well, Florida evangelist Bill Keller says he was making a spiritual, not political statement when he warned the 2.4 million subscribers to his internet prayer ministry, if you vote for Mitt Romney, you're voting for Satan. He also has a call-in show in Florida called Romney, a proud member of a Mormon cult hunted by a murdering polygamous pedophile named Joseph Smith 2 years ago. If the former Massachusetts governor wins the GOP nomination and the presidency, Keller's message added, it will ultimately lead millions of souls to the eternal flames of hell.
Fantastic. I mean, I always say that the people don't have a strong enough statement in politics these days.
Somebody's going to replace Jerry Falwell.
There's a man who says what he believes and believes what he says. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I would like to read for the Tim Riley spot.
Ah, yes. We're going to be next Wednesday, we're going to be touring Body Worlds 3 at OMSI. It's going to be Sarah, myself, and Scotty J. Tim has opted not to go, so we are going to be having somebody replace Tim Riley for the day, in as much as Tim Riley can be replaced. Somebody will be going to OMSI in his stead, and then if they don't entirely suck, they'll be doing some stories maybe on next Friday when he is not going to be here. That is not right now in the program, so that's going to be later on, probably sometime in the, I would imagine sometime in the 1 o'clock hour. So you want to be listening for that, Catherine. It'll be sometime next hour, probably.
Sometime within the next hour, then call back in.
Yeah, I'd be listening. We'll say when it, we'll give the announcement sometime in the 1 o'clock hour.
I see.
Thank you. She doesn't sound very happy about that.
Well, it was faulty call screening.
Yes, it was, Tim. Yes, it was. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Time for a Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson program.
This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you...
It's just a television show. That's all, okay?
I'm going to watch this movie this weekend.
Right, but we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn shit. You got it?
Energize.
The upcoming fourth season of Sci-Fi Channel's Battlestar Galactica will be the final one after all. After months of speculation, the show's producers are set to make the announcement at a press conference sometime today. Ending Battlestar was the, with the upcoming 22-episode fourth season, was a creative decision made by the hit show's executive producer Ronald Moore and David Eck. The show was always meant to have a beginning, a middle, and finally an end, said the statement that was issued. That took some thought. Over the course of the last year, the story and the characters have been moving strongly toward the end. We decided to listen to those internal voices, their hearing voices, and conclude the show on our own terms. And while we know our fans will be saddened to know the end is coming, they should brace themselves for a wild ride getting there, or going out with a bang. The fourth and final season of Galactica will kick off in November with Razor, an extended two-hour episode, and the rest of the season slated to run beginning in early 2008. The Sci-Fi Executive Vice President of Programming, Mark Stern, said the channel's brass respect the producer's decision to end the series.
Well, that it sounds to me like they were probably I don't know, because the show's apparently really good, but it sounds like that, like they felt like they were going to get canceled, and so it was like a walk before they make us run kind of a thing. So, I know, don't, and spare me the emails. I'll watch it. I swear to Christ, I'll watch it. Just get off my back. I will watch Battlestar Galactica. Aaron is going to be, the next time Aaron comes in, he's going to be bringing me the whole first season on DVD. So I will be watching Battlestar Galactica at my next opportunity. I have not watched it yet. I'm not, not like it's a concerted effort to miss it. I just haven't seen it. So I will get to it. Apparently it's nearly flawless. Which you can say about a very rare, you can't say that about too much on television now, so.
No.
All right, there's your Geek Watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Show.
By Grabstar's hammer, by the Sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
What a savings.
Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Well, it's time to talk about this spelling bee all the kids are into these days. This year, Scripps National Spelling Bee champion is 13-year-old Evan O'Dorney. The California 8th grader, who is homeschooled, spelled Seraphine correctly to win the 88th annual competition last night in Washington, D.C. Seraphine is defined as a small forceps for clapping a blood vessel. During an interview with Robin Roberts on Good Morning America, O'Dorney said that juggling helps him spell. He juggled while spelling Radicchio. I think that's what it is.
R-A-D-I-C-C-H-I-O.
Yes, that is correct.
Jesus Christ. Remind me to never watch that show. What was it, Good Morning America?
Yes, he's spelling Radicchio.
I didn't even know Good Morning America was still on the air. Good Morning America is one of those things.
Oh, it fills time.
And good night, forgot about it. Like we're so much better. Well, it passes the time, I suppose. It's either this or just stare blankly at my sock drawer. The Good Morning America is one of those programs that to me seems just so hopelessly stuck in the 80s. It just seems like a relic of a bygone era. It's sort of like TV, like evening.
Is David Hartman still on that?
I have no... Is he the guy with the huge teeth?
Yes.
That's funny? He's the last guy I remember hosting it, too.
Yes.
If you put a gun to my knees, I couldn't tell you who hosts Good Morning America right now.
I couldn't either.
That's exactly the
who
guy. What was his name? David Hartman?
Yeah.
That's exactly the guy that I remember hosting it. And I know he hasn't been on there. It's probably been 25 years since he's been on there.
That's the last time I watched it.
Who watches Good Morning America? Is that the one where they're broadcasting in the glass studio and there's idiots standing outside on the street waving?
No, that's the Today Show. They're at 30 Rock.
Who hosts the Today Show now?
Oh, I don't know. Dave Galloway?
Wait, is that on CBS?
No, the Today Show is an NBC show.
What's on CBS in the morning?
They have a new show that nobody watches. This is...
No, that's in the evening.
No, the morning show that nobody watched was on long before the evening show that nobody watched.
It's good that you're a stockholder.
Well, the stock is cheap right now. And don't forget, CBS is American as apple pie. Just like Chrysler and Ford and Chevrolet.
If you don't buy CBS stock, you're a bad American.
You are.
You're aiding the Nazis. Okay. Well,
I don't know who's on the Today Show. Isn't it Brian Gumbel?
I don't know.
And they always have a fat weatherman. I don't know who it is this week. The fat jolly guy. Happy 200th anniversary to Mary, who lives in Great Falls, Montana.
I don't know.
Known by all the townspeople for her generosity, her knitted doilies.
I don't know. I have no... They all just drift together in one big confluence of just giggling and huge teeth. Let's see. Rick, this is what he all says. I'm not a prude, and I can tolerate about 5 seconds of people making out in public. When they're on TV, my tolerance goes down to 2-second hugs or pecks before I start feeling disgusted. I.e., oh, this is totally true. Yes. He references now, this is a pop culture thing, he references one of the most notorious displays of pop culture affection, and it's not Michael Jackson and what's her name? Lisa Marie. Do you know what I'm talking about now?
No.
Yes, you do.
Maybe.
You know all about Broughton Bishop. This is Alan Tipper Gore. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. That
remember Al Gore and Tipper Gore? And they were like, it was full on tongues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to see... Look, I'm glad that Al Gore has a healthy sexual drive. It's, you know, God love him. He's got to keep making those hot Gore daughters somehow. But I'm just saying, I don't want to see him. And let me just also say this. As a child of the 80s, as somebody who grew up under the PMRC and Tipper Gore's concerted efforts to take music away from me, it really was distressing to find out that she was kind of hot. I remember when I sort of became like a 14, 15, 16-year-old, and I realized that Tipper Gore was sort of sexy, which is just really, this gave me all of this cognitive dissonance. I just didn't know how to, anyway. This is the best part of the email, though. He says, when people are roughly the age of steam locomotion and are doing anything besides shaking hands or giving a one-pat hug, I feel like I'm going to vomit up my shoes while my face is being torn off by a tractor. No one needs to think about rasping powdered kisses, the flavor of sugar-free hard candies. Larry King kissing Nancy Reagan equals the Crypt Keeper make out with an alien with a gray Brillo pad wig on its head.
Your kisses taste like suspenders, Larry.
Nancy, your sweet kisses taste like death. Sweet powdery death.
Here's Tim Riley. Well, back to this spelling bee champion.
Oh, fantastic, great.
We're not done yet.
Stay on this story all day.
Here we could. The spelling bee's mother, Jennifer, tells ABC's Good Morning America that she knew her son could spell the final word in the bee.
Well, I can usually tell if he knows the word. I can tell by his pace, because he will, if he knows it, he'll spell it right away.
All right. Am I the only one hearing the mouth breathing in the background?
Well, that's actually from the Nancy Reagan.
Seriously. Larry. Okay, play it. Play that clip again. Listen to the creepy, and you know it's the kid, too. And you know, look, I hate to paint with a broad brush. I know there are exceptions, but you know homeschool kids are creepy. You and I know. You know it. I know it. It's not because homeschooling is bad for you as such. I mean, look, not like public schools are any prize. You apparently have to skip like a girl everywhere you go now. So it's not like public schools are really making you like a smart, productive member of society. You're probably turning out just as stupid as everybody else. But... So it's not like homeschooling is bad for you per se. It's that the kind of parent that insists on homeschooling their child is creepy. There is a creepy kind of personality that insists on homeschooling their child. And it usually comes with the belief that there were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark and the Earth is only 6,000 years old.
Well, they're missing out on the good-natured bullying. It gives you a little backbone.
The good-natured
bullying. You get that good retail job in your future.
The good-natured ribbing and sodomizing that happens in locker rooms after gym class. You play that clip again. Listen to this breathing in the background that this kid is probably doing.
Well, I can usually tell if he knows the word. I can tell by his pace, because he will, if he knows it, he'll spell it right away.
I don't know if you all can hear that by the time it gets through our processing.
Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, totally. But there's some weird... Yeah, there's a black trench coat in that kid's future. Did you see this new Loch Ness Monster story?
I did. I saw the video.
Have you pulled all... Do you have that somewhere?
I have it somewhere?
The story?
I had it somewhere, but I don't know what I did.
Well, we do. At some point today, we should talk about that Loch Ness... As you know, I'm a big fan of the Loch Ness Monster. So, all right.
Well, Democrats are ripping the president's new proposal on fighting global change. That's global climate change. And Nancy Pelosi said the president merely rehashed some stale ideas about his global warming.
The weakness of his proposal leads us to question whether he fully understands the urgency of global warming. The facts are conclusive, the science is clear, and yet the president continues to be in denial.
She needs a Larry King kiss.
Okay. I'm finding myself like just scratching myself uncontrollably when you talk about that. You know what it is? Can I just tell you this?
Sure.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me. It's giving me chills just thinking about it. When you talk about the Larry King and Nancy Reagan making out, it reminds me of. That guy, and I forget his name, but do you remember that guy in the 80s who was married to Martha Ray, who was at that point about 100 years old? She had no teeth.
Oh, she got married to her hairdresser.
Oh, so maybe, well, I mean, I don't know if the marriage was ever consummated. Not anything. I don't know about that. I'm not familiar with the intimate aspects of that relationship. But she was like 100 and I think had one leg at that point and just was one big wrinkle. I mean, just one big bad...
Well, she was in a wheelchair with a parasol.
With one big gray hair covered fold. And it was just so hard to imagine. And I remember, I may be wrong about this. I don't remember that guy's name, but he was like 35.
Yeah.
He was a hairdresser. She had one leg, no teeth, lots of wrinkles, in a wheelchair. And I do seem to recall that there was some interview he gave where he did say, now maybe he was just goofing, but he did say that they had a full and healthy sex life. And, I mean, look, everyone needs love. I understand that. Rick Emerson is not trying to deny anybody affection or the touch of their fellow human being. I'm just saying, every time I think about that, the contents of my stomach form an exit strategy. That's all I'm saying. All right. Well, in any event, let's not talk about that kind of... Let's go back to talking about Bill Pullman versus Bill Paxton. All right, here's that, Tim Riley.
A major auction in Vegas this weekend could be a rock and roll fan's dream come true. Hundreds of items to be sold to the highest bidder. Most of this memorabilia comes to the personal collection of Dick Clark. It's unknown if he knows what
about Dick Clark
going on.
Talk about Dick. What if he tried to start? Dick.
Chris. Nancy.
I was just gonna say, let's talk about Dick Clark kissing Nancy Reagan.
It says here, the ageless Dick Clark. I believe this is taken from his press kit from 1963. The ageless Dick Clark is now selling his collection.
He feels that now is the time to move forward and.
In his wheelchair.
He did have a stroke, and really there is so much stuff there that he can't really enjoy it.
He has no mobility.
I was going to say,
he ran over a Fats Domino CD and overturned his chair.
He's decided to move forward about 8 inches so they can give his backside a good scrubbing for the morning. Jesus, God.
Think you look great.
Thank you.
Many of these items are affordable to the typical rock and roll fan.
In this auction, there are pieces that are very accessible, that are, you know, in the range of anything up from $100 to $1,000.
That's Dick Clark's auction.
The ageless Dick Clark.
The ageless
Dick Clark. I think we have to refer to him as that from now on. All right. That guy's name was Mark Harris. That's the guy who was... apparently having sex with the luscious Martha Ray.
So I wonder if he got the her home after she died.
Well,
is this some Sunset Boulevard type of thing?
That's what I'm... Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think that there was... I think it was...
Cameras.
I believe it was understood that there was sort of... It was an arrangement. Because I know that I think if you are... For instance, I think if you are an... a non-citizen, and I think if you hook up with a citizen, in other words, if you move here from another country, I think you do have to, you do have to sign some affidavit that you engage in marital relations. I do believe there is, so maybe that was the same thing if he was trying to, you know, if it was something where they hooked up and then he got part of her property when she passed away, and maybe that's why he had to get on television and claim that he was, like, sticking it to her a couple times a day. But boy, goddamn, it was just the most stomach-churning thing. I mean, we're all going to get old, but boy. All right, let's see. Rick. Okay, apparently, yeah. Okay, well, never mind. This is more information about Martha Ray than I really want to know. Here's Tim Riley.
We can't hear about this?
Somebody's asking if Stephen Hawking and Dick Clark are going to make out. That's just in poor taste, sir. That's just wrong.
That is in poor taste.
Yes, apparently Mark Harris has recorded and released a song. He apparently is a musical artist as well. This guy is a hairdresser who is married to Martha Ray and claims that they had a full and healthy sex life. She didn't even have a full body. How could you have a full sex life? He apparently recorded and released a song called I'm a Big Gay Papa. So there you go. So just make of that what you will. Here's Tim Riley.
Stephen Baldwin has been rushed to a Texas hospital after being thrown from a real-life fucking bronco during the taping of an upcoming reality show. Sources say that this is a Ty Murray's Celebrity Bull Riding Challenge. Baldwin broke a shoulder and a rib when a bad ride sent him crashing to the rodeo floor. Baldwin was treated and released, and we're told he's back on the set in a sling. That's no bull.
Is he the crazy Christian Baldwin?
Yes, he is.
All right.
He follows 9 Hollywood celebrities on location in Texas when they try to master the art of bull riding.
Well, that sounds like a fantastic show. Remind me to watch that never. Let's do one more.
Leif Garrett was also seriously injured before him, and Vanilla Ice remained unharmed.
You know Vanilla Ice is coming to Portland?
I didn't know that, no.
Vanilla Ice is coming to
Vanilla
Portland.
Vanilla Ice or Robert Van Winkle?
I don't think he's ever toured as Robert Van Winkle. I mean, people know that's his name, but I think he has always performed. I may be wrong about that, but I don't think he's done like an MC Hammer thing.
We have to have the station sponsor that. You know that.
Oh, no, we're working on it. Okay, we're looking into it right now. With Vanilla Ice.
As we speak.
No, it's because, you know, because he's all with the metal now. He raps, but it's all like the rap metal, the new metal that the kids are into. So he is coming to town as Vanilla Ice. And I have to say, can I just tell you this? I'm not going to say that I'm a huge Vanilla Ice fan, but I don't dislike him, and I never did. Like, I don't like him any more than I used to, but I never went through some period where I hated Vanilla Ice. I never understood why everybody disliked him so much. This country, I mean, it's well known that the country just sort of creates celebrities and then chews them up and spits them back out, but I never understood why all the hatred for Vanilla Ice. I mean, you know, he was just, he was sort of lame and ridiculous, but I mean, so what? So is everybody. So I never really had a big, he didn't have a whole lot of demonstrable talent, but I mean, get in line. So I never had any disproportionate hatred for Vanilla Ice. He just kind of does what he does. And, and the great thing about Vanilla Ice is he is completely and absolutely up, you know, unlike most celebrities who they have the one huge hit or the one big record and then they're destitute, that guy is unbelievably wealthy. And he'll be the first to tell you, his accountants will be the first to tell you that. He didn't spend any money. He bought a house. He stuck it all in T-bills or whatever it is you do with that kind of money or however you invest that much money. And he said, I never have to work again if I don't want to. He's like, I can just sit around my house and just do nothing but drink all day if I want. But he still goes out and does his thing and, you know, whatever. God love him. Let's do one more and we'll break and come back with Jim Roop.
The Loch Ness Monster is back and there's video. A man has captured Nessie and what they say is possible footage of the supposedly mystical creature beneath Scotland's most mysterious lake. I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw this jet black thing, about 45 feet long, moving fairly fast in the water, says Gordon Holmes. He's a 55-year-old lab technician from Yorkshire who took the video last weekend. Nessie watcher and marine biologist Adrian Shrine viewed the video and hoped to properly analyze it in the coming months. I see myself as a skeptical interpreter of what happens in the lock, but I try to keep an open mind, and there's no doubt this is the best footage I have ever seen, said Shrine.
Yeah, the video footage is crap. I watched it last night. It's pointless.
It's a long black thing underwater.
It's a wave. That's all it is. It's a wave. I mean, there's two different things he's talking about, because you notice the camera cuts away between the two. I can go on and on at tedious length about the Loch Ness Monster. I won't. I'm the first to admit there probably is no Loch Ness Monster. I realize that. I hate to break your heart.
Did you tell my child there's no Loch Ness Monster?
Yes, Virginia. There is a coelacanth. No, ever since I was a child, I have a fascination with the concept of the Loch Ness Monster. Now, in my heart of hearts, I know that there is no Loch Ness Monster, but that doesn't stop me from watching every stupid show about it, and I'm not a guy who believes in this, you know, whatever the stupid, what do they call the cryptozoology, like fake creatures and whatever.
Yes.
But the Loch Ness Monster is just a fascinating concept to me. Just the whole idea of it is really gripping, and so I watch all that stuff like an idiot. But all of the best photos, they've all been debunked. That's the great thing. I was so much happier when I was a child, and I had Loch Ness Monster books that showed, like, the surgeon's photograph and the hay bale photograph and just all of the photograph, like the three hump photograph, all of the stuff that we all grew up seeing. And those things have all been now completely and totally debunked, and, you know, everybody knows that it's crap. There is no compelling evidence. It's all been just revealed to be hoaxified and so forth. But whenever there's a story about this, I got to tell you, I would be lying if I said that I didn't get a little excited. Last night, as soon as I saw the Loch Ness Monster thing, man, I just kind of went, oh, and I clicked on it and watched it. And it's just a wave, because Loch Ness has these weird subsurface waves that come along. It's a current, and it's just a wave that comes along, and there's a large ripple that moves along, and it causes the water to be dark.
It's not just Nessie holding her breath.
No,
it's swimming underwater. And is Nessie a man or a woman?
Nessie is a
Loch Ness Monster.
You're just screwing with me.
I'm curious.
You're just taunting me now.
I'm not.
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, is Nessie, what gender is the name Nessie?
I believe
is it short for something else.
I believe that is effeminate. See, you're just being cruel now. You're just toying with my love of the Loch Ness.
I do want to know.
You're making sport of me.
I am not.
And then the camera, this idiot who's holding the camera. I saw an interview with him, by the way, and he's a nutcase. He's a loon. The camera cuts away, and then it cuts back, and there's like a second thing he's filming, which is obviously like a duck. It's obviously like a bird flying along the surface of the water. So, you know, so that's another theory. Just shot all the hell. Oh, God. Is this somebody calling about the Loch Ness Monster?
Perhaps there's been another sighting.
I'm looking at the...
In Clackamas.
Scotty, this person. Is this person calling about the Loch Ness Monster? Yeah, really? Honestly, are you screwing with me? All right. And then we got a break. Hi.
Rick.
Hi.
I think you're high on Ripple right now.
On Ripple.
That thing is real. I was there in 1982.
Were you aware?
At Loch Ness. I spent a night at the Loch Ness Youth Hostel. You can look it up. It exists.
Okay. You can't.
So Loch Ness Youth Hostel doesn't.
I was just going to say, you can't start off the call by feeling like you have to prove that the hostel is even real. It seems like you're digging yourself into a hole before you even start, sir.
Rick, just leave the Loch Ness Monster alone, will you?
If you know what's
He's
good
real.
For him.
He's real, damn it.
Are you just. This is not a sincere call.
No, he is. No, I saw that video on YouTube last night. Well, on the YouTube.
Yes.
Or how. It's real, Rick. You could see that dark line travel through the lock.
I had such high hopes for this call. I thought
it's
you were going to be
a ripple.
I thought you were going to be somebody who called up and was a true believer.
I am a true believer.
You are. I don't believe
damn
it. This sounds. You sound like you're just trying to be obstinate, sir.
No, I was there.
Okay. Were you really? Okay. Let's start from
yeah.
the top. Okay. Let's start from the top. Did you really go to Loch Ness in 1982?
Yes.
Did you really stay at the Loch Ness Youth Hostel?
Yes.
Did you go out on Loch Ness in a boat?
No.
Okay. While you were there on the shores of Loch Ness, did you see anything that you honestly believe was the Loch Ness Monster?
No, but I threw some breadcrumbs into the left.
Yes, he loves breadcrumbs.
Okay. All right. You know, hey, there's a mysterious sound. Wait, hold on. Thanks so much. I should have just gone with my instinct.
Well, that call was a waste of time.
No, it was a total waste of time. Thank you, sir. You've taken me 45 seconds closer to death. That's one cigarette. Scotty could have been smoking a cigarette in that amount of time. You know, sometimes, can't you just tell from the tone sometimes? Just
no.
Vocally, their tone, you can tell when the whole call is going to be an extended gag. And sometimes the proof that the call is going to be an extended jape is when they insist that they're being serious. Sometimes that... coupled with a sort of snarky tone of voice, you can just tell that the entire call is going to be pointless. All right.
I'm sorry I brought the whole thing up.
And then you toyed with me. And then
I was curious.
Oh, and then you were manipulating my love of the Loch Ness Monster for
cheap
humor. I didn't
know what the gender of the animal is.
Well, no one knows because that they would necessarily have to have discovered the Loch Ness Monster to know what gender the Loch Ness Monster is. All right.
That settles that.
Well, we're like 2 minutes away from Jim Roop calling. Should we just sit here?
Might as well.
And reminisce about the Loch Ness Monster in its formative years.
I gotta admit, I'm kind of in a daze today. I'm a little, I think I'm a little under caffeinated. Well, here's what we could do. I could do this hunt for the second worst story ever.
Let's do it.
Let's do it right now. Well, hey, Scotty, if Jim Roop calls, tell him we'll get to him right after the story. Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time once again. It's time for our hunt for the second worst story ever. Now, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to read these two stories. You will then call and vote on which story you find to be the most off-putting. Story number one or story number two. Now, story number one is the champion. It is the holder of the crown right now, and I was waiting until I found something that was sufficiently horrible, or horrible, as the French say, to give it a run for its money. As soon as the second story is underway, or when you get the gist of it, please to be calling 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970 as we hunt for the second worst story in the history of all humanity. Story number one. A worker was injured this afternoon when his penis became caught in the machinery at a northern suburbs sawmill. The man, age 30, was working at the Parafield Garden sawmill at about 1:50 p.m. when his
crotch and penis. Became caught in the chain of a piece of machinery. He was taken to Royal Adelaide Hospital. It is believed his injuries are not life-threatening, but he did suffer uncontrollable bleeding. A company spokesman said, rather unconvincingly, the man's injuries were, quote, not serious. He was just a minor catching of his scrotum and penis on the buzzsaw. He got caught in the log-moving mechanism on one of the saws, the spokesperson said. That's story number one. Right there, story number one. Here is story number two, courtesy of our friend Mark. Dateline, somewhere in Germany. A German man almost died after using a toilet plunger as a bathtub plug and impaling himself after slipping on a bar of soap. Dieter Bayer, 79, decided to use the plunger because he could not find the bath plug. But as he stood up to soap himself off, he slipped and fell heavily on the plunger, wedging the wooden handle entirely up his backside.
Oh, good Lord.
His wife, 68, who rushed to the bathroom when she heard him screaming in pain, was unable to pull him off the plunger despite repeated attempts.
So it was still suctioned to the bottom of the bathtub?
The plunger was suctioned to the bottom of the bathtub, and the wooden handle of the plunger was stuck deep inside Dieter. An ambulance spokesman said, there was a lot of blood. The injury was very serious. He could have died. The plunger was stuck entirely in his body. Doctors operated for 8 hours to remove the wooden plunger handle.
Splinters.
And to repair the damage. And said it will be at least 2 weeks before he can even leave hospital. There you go. That's from Germany. The Florida of Europe. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Please now to be calling this phone number. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970 to be telling us which story you find the most horrifying. Story number one, man catches his scrotum and penis on a buzzsaw. Story number two, man falls in the bathtub onto a toilet plunger and jams the entire wooden handle into his backside. Please now to be calling 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970 as we search for the second worst story in the history of all humanity. We'll just go to these phones. Scotty, you don't need to screen these. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
Oh, dear God, probably the second one.
Second one. You find the plunger to be the worst?
Yes. A little bit of cutting and slicing and dicing. Sure, that stuff can be sewn back on, but falling and uncontrolled. Ow.
All right. Thank you. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
Now, which part of his body was that plunger stuck in? I'm thinking this was not accidental if it was where it might be.
You're thinking that perhaps he was engaging in a self-pleasure activity.
Yeah, and then he kind of might have lost his footing, and then he kind of went all enum cloth.
So let me... Thanks. Thanks for that. So you
was the first thing that popped into my mind. I'm thinking that he got caught doing something that...
Then you too have a sick mind like me.
So you believe that the slipping and falling part is true. You just question why he was above the plunger in the bathtub to begin with.
Yes, pretty much. But regardless of all of that, I still think the first one with the machinery and the gag and then the yank and then the... that was the worst one.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
The second one is definitely the worst.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, my friend. It's 503-733-2970. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story is the worst?
Those Germans, man. Number two. That's... Ow.
Thank you. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
Hey, Rick. This is Andy.
Hey.
Andy!
I don't have it handy. I don't have it handy, Andy.
I always catch you with that one. All right, I'd say B, even though A is always the worst if it has a log or a log truck.
Wait, understand. So the second one, the plunger?
The plunger is worse, but anytime you involve logs or log trucks, I'm scared.
All right, okay, excellent. All right, thank you, sir. All right, you go. Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
That's number two.
All right.
Getting it in the number two has got to be the worst. Besides, I know somebody who was killed that way.
Wait, you know somebody who was killed by having a plunger in that area?
Yeah, it was the...
Yeah, we're bleeping that.
Goodbye.
Yeah, thanks so much. Way to be an upper. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which do you find to be the worst? Hi there. Which story do you find to be the worst?
Go with Paul Harvey, the rest of the story. Number two by far.
Okay. And now number two. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. It looks to be a blowout here. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
Well, I have to believe number two, Rick, because I stayed at that youth hostel in Germany where that happened.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks so much. We'll just finish out this bank, and then we'll be the... Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
Deep Inside Dieter.
I'm sorry?
Deep Inside Dieter. Number two.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst? Okay. Two more calls. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
Oh, the plunger by far.
All right, there you go.
I just picture his wife tugging on his arm and that.
And here's the worst part, by the way, before we take the final call. The worst part is, so the plunger is stuck to the bottom of the bathtub. He's above the plunger. He falls. The plunger enters his body. He says, ow, ow, ow. She comes in. She grabs him, and the best part is he's all soaped up. So she, by his own admission, so she grabs him, and in my like in the movie of this that plays in my head, she pulls him. He lifts up a little bit, but then he keeps slipping out of her hands, and he keeps falling back down on him, and it keeps going back in. So it gets about halfway out. And then it just, and then it re-enters again.
Oh, man, I was laughing like a loon.
That's what we do. See, and you can be glad that no matter what's wrong with your life, this is not your life today, sir.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
Thank you, sir. Here we go. Final call. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
Yeah, man, number two is bad. It's worse than running through a cornfield backwards.
All right. Thank you, my friend. All right, there you go. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. We have a new champion. We have a new champion in our search for the second worst story ever. It is German man impaled on plunger in bathtub. Fantastic. We'll take a break. We'll come back after this. 503-733-2970. Still ahead, more from Tim Riley, Jim Roop, Cross Country, Nate, Scott Daly, Corden Fatboy, and the Young Immortals live in studio. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming by. It's the Rick Emerson. When's that? Yeah, okay. Sorry. Back at zero. Repeating myself. Hi, let me say it a third time. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. It's Friday. It is 503-733-2970. You'd like to join us? 503. I'm doing that mammoth thing. I'm just dropping random one-syllable words. 503-733-2970. You'd like to join us? You want to email us, you can do it as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. I'm just going to go home and sleep all day tomorrow. That's what I'm going to do. I got like 3 hours of sleep last night, but then yesterday is fine because it never hits me that day. It always hits me the day after. And so today I just got that weird fatigue going on of like having had no sleep. Here's what we're going to do. Just a skosh, as our Asian friends say. We'll talk to Jim Roop. Bottom of the hour, Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. We'll talk to Cross Country Nate, who's in the green room right now, the Art Alexakis green kitchen. Do you notice this about that Everclear poster? There's three guys in Everclear, but there's four signatures on that poster.
I noticed that. Maybe the manager or something signed it.
The manager didn't sign that.
Well, there's always been, because remember, Davey Nipples was in Everclear, and there's always been like...
It's not his signature, though. I looked.
Maybe there was another dude playing
like
guitar.
Like another touring guitarist,
yeah.
Maybe. All right, I suppose that could be it. Because they had, because they always did have a, they had a second guitarist who would tour with them. Maybe that's who it is. All right. What am I doing? Oh, yeah, so Jim Roop here, bottom of the hour, Tim Riley, then Cross Country Nate is going to join us for a few, just kind of say hello, shake his hand, see what's up, get up to speed as he gets ready to travel across the country. Starting tomorrow, we'll do a top five with him, the top five road trip songs. Scotty J has prepared the top five road trip songs. We'll count those down with Cross Country Nate. Then in the 2 o'clock hour, Scott Daly, Corden Fatboy, the Young Immortals. It's more show than you can shake a thing at. You know, a thing that you would shake, which is what? Thick. Thank you. Hi. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program welcoming Jim Roop to the show. Hello, sir.
Shaking my thing, man.
Yeah, I don't even know what I'm doing. I got the...
There's a whole lot of fog in my head today. I don't know what that's all about. Where's life in Los Angeles, sir? How are things?
Life's beautiful, man. It's about 78 degrees, a little breeze happening.
And is the judge down there is, I mean, look, you might be done with the Spectre trial sooner than you thought. The judge is telling them to get a move on, isn't he?
Well, he's telling the defense to get a move on with this one witness. The coroner was on the deputy coroner who did the autopsy and actually went to the shooting scene, the death scene. Not allowed to call it a crime scene because obviously the defense says it wasn't a crime.
Sure.
He's been on the stand for 3 days. And the judge said, look, I've been hearing from the jury room, probably via the deputies, that the jury's getting a little ticked off at all this. Not that it's hard to follow. It's just getting dreary.
Sure.
Because it gets lost in minutia. And he's just advising them. He can't tell them how to run their case, but he's advising them to move it along.
It does seem, I mean... Yeah, part of me understands that because the criminal justice system can be just unbelievably tedious, I would imagine. But, of course, on the other hand, you know, it just seems like, I don't know, I remember, and it seems like it was during the O.J. trial, when the O.J. trial was, I think, the first time in recent memory, anyway, that there was some sort of a runaway jury where the jury actually started, like, issuing demands. The jury started saying that they weren't going to show up to court unless certain conditions were met. And it does seem like that slowly but surely the jury process is changing and the juries are starting to assert themselves a little more over the last few years.
But
so.
This Judge Fidler, though, I mean, he runs a real tight courtroom. This guy is never late. Everything is on time. If he says we're starting at 1:30, man, we started, you know, 1:29:50.
Right.
And it's amazing how accurate this guy is and how much of control he has inside that courtroom. Even Bruce Cutler, I mean, he's got him, you know, he just shakes him and says, sit down. I mean, it's just beautiful to watch. It would not surprise me at this point now that we would see Phil Spector on the witness stand.
Really? Really? Why do you say that?
Because it seems like, first of all, he wants to tell a story. The judge is not going to allow statements made to police that Phil Spector made hours after the death of Lana Clarkson, you know, about how he doesn't know what happened. He doesn't know why she was running around the house with a gun. He doesn't know why she shot herself. Those statements the defense wants in. Because all you hear, the only statement that's heard so far is the limo driver saying that Spector said, I think I killed somebody.
Right.
Well, the judge says, you can't admit those statements, and those hearsay statements by Spector, because the prosecution would have no opportunity to cross-examine. Now, if you want those statements in, Mr. Spector can take the stand. And I'm thinking the defense, it would be a huge mistake. But the defense, you could see the wheels starting to turn.
Because they had no choice. That's the only way they can get the statement in.
Yeah. But then Alan Jackson will come up and say, oh, so how did she get that gun?
Right, right. And of course,
where was it? How many guns do you have? I mean, it would just go nuts.
And probably, great choice of words, because clearly it's not even that. It's not even necessarily picking apart the specifics of Phil Spector's story. Clearly what they would be hoping is they would get him on the stand, and they would just lean on him, and just his brain would fold like a flan in a cupboard.
Yeah.
And then that's it, and he would just come apart. That's the thing, right? They would just want to get him up there and just push him.
It would be a very aggressive prosecution cross-examination. Usually it's the defense that attacks the witness. But I would love to see this because, man, the prosecution would just have a field day.
Right.
And the defense, Spector's already heavily medicated. You can see it. They would just dope him up so he is incoherent as hell, and he would, the cross examination would go down the toilet.
I almost didn't even want to think about it because then I'll get excited and then it won't happen.
Oh, I know. I yesterday I'm going like, wow, this could really happen, and everybody's telling me no, that's not gonna happen. But I don't know, man. It would not surprise me now.
Fantastic.
If they decide to throw that junior on the stand.
Oh, that's so
great. And you know. It would be great. It would be worth all this crap I'm sitting through.
And here's the thing. I mean, it's not just that he would come across as crazy, but you get the feeling, sort of like that Ed Norton movie, Primal Fear. You get the feeling not only is he crazy, but I think whether or not he committed this crime, I think everybody's aware that he's got what we might charitably call a hair-trigger temper.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the prosecution, if I was the prosecution, that's what you do, you know?
But
you
the greatest part is, Rick, he wouldn't be as methodical as the Ed Norton character was.
Right.
You know,
right.
As deceptive and calculated. He would just slip into that
personality that we've been hearing so much about by these five other women.
Because he's just flat out crazy.
Oh, wouldn't that be? Oh, I got to start going to church more.
See, that's what I'm saying. It's you got to start living right, so God will give you some good karma.
And then they're trying to get this journal, if you will, by Lana Clarkson, who talks about her fascination with guns, who talks about talks about chucking it all. It's some really interesting stuff, and if they allow that in, the judge is going to rule on that in a couple of weeks. That could change the course of this whole trial, and they wouldn't have to put Spector on the stand, because that would definitely put some doubt in at least one of the jurors' minds that Lana Clarkson was a little unstable, because her mental condition is definitely an issue in this trial. It's just so many things that could happen in the next couple of weeks. I can't wait till Tuesday or Monday, whenever that. What's the day? Friday? I can't wait till Monday.
It is. No, it really is exciting. It really is.
It's
getting
there anyway.
This is where the rubber is meeting the road.
That's right, son.
All right. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the sun. We will talk to you next week and see how crazy things get.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Jim Roop in Los Angeles, ladies and gentlemen. All right, coming up, we got Cross Country Nate, the top five. This is Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
All people are just so stupid. Remember that dead whale that they buried this week?
Yes, I do.
Well, they should have known ahead of time that if you bury something on the beach, the tide will come in and unbury it. I think we made some reference to that the other day.
Uh-huh.
Well, apparently that's what happened. So now, genius, they decided that the whale has to be moved to a different place.
Again, except now it's all squishy and liquidy.
Uh-huh.
You know it's true.
So at some point this weekend, the whale will be moved to a new resting place.
I don't think they're going to be able to keep it secret. I mean, it does seem like that's the thing everybody's going to be aware of. I'm not entirely. Maybe it's a thing that I just thought.
Don't people know that?
No, they're fools. I mean, who isn't aware of how the tides work? I mean, how do they think? Look, can I just say it? How do they think the whale got to the goddamn beach in the first place? The tide brought it in. The tide giveth. The tide taketh away. So, there you go. Well, fantastic.
Just another day in the life of Oregon.
Yes. Yes, it's true.
Well, a Kansas City woman wants to serve Paris Hilton's jail sentence for her when she reports on June 5th. Mary McClendon believes Paris is scared to go to jail.
Her sentence is kind of too much for her because she hasn't killed anyone. If they want to punish Paris, anything they need to do is maybe put her in a classroom, something that she really has to focus on.
That is actually kind of true. Just put her in school and make her read something.
That would be a punishment.
Because she apparently hasn't killed anybody, apparently. So, yes. All right. Well, when does that happen? Is that Monday or Tuesday?
No, the 5th.
When is the 5th?
That is Tuesday.
Tuesday. Because my shrink is Monday the 4th. So Tuesday the 5th, Paris Hilton. And how sad that's how I chart everything in my life. Paydays and shrinks. So, on Tuesday. So, maybe on Monday. Maybe on Monday or Tuesday, depending. We still got to talk to some people who've gone, because nobody in the show's really gone to jail for any length of time. I think I'm the only one on the show that's been arrested, and even I only went to jail for like a day. So we got.
You're always a crime victim.
Yes, it is. Yes, that's exactly.
You're not the perpetrator. No, you're the victim.
Very rarely am I the perpetrator, Tim. It really is like a 1-10 ratio. So at some point, though, I'd like to talk to somebody who's done like a stretch in county, as they say, and just to see like. So don't call about this now, or if you do, just maybe give your information to Scotty or email Scotty directly. It's scottyj@970.am. I would like to know, here's what I want to know. We'll talk about this next week, but maybe email Scotty this. It's scottyj@970.am. I think we'd like to know, what is Paris's first day in jail going to be like? Like when you first walk in off the street, you know, they say, oh, look,
body
you got
cavity search.
Is, but do they do that?
I would imagine so. Why should she be given special treatments?
Well, I mean, they've already given her a little bit of special treatment. They reduced her sentence. She's not going to be in general population. I wonder if there is some guy there with a glove up to his elbow that's going to have to be looking for contraband. You know what I mean?
Boy, there's a hidden camera up the glove.
There's not enough scrubbing in the world for that. Pardon me, Paris. I'm just going to have to. You know, I mean, that's just no good. So, you walk in off the street, you know, and they say, okay, right this way. And then there's that ching, and the door shuts behind you. And, I mean, what happens then? I mean, if you have hair extensions, do you have to take them out yourself? Do they take them out for you? You know, if you have makeup, do they make you take it off? Can you wear, I mean, it sounds weird, but I mean, really, like, can you wear your own underwear? Or, like, when you get there, do you have to take your underwear off and they give you underwear to put on? I mean, and then you just go right to your cell? Or do they de-louse you somehow? All I know about prison is again, my own one-day jail stay and the Shawshank Redemption. I mean, that's pretty much it. That's all I really know. So, maybe on Monday we'll talk about that. Here's Tim Riley.
There are people who deserve jail time more than Paris Hilton.
You think that she'll learn a lesson? People go to jail for DUIs and stuff, and they get out. They're not learning anything. Some people get out and do the same thing all over again.
Actress Lindsay Lohan is continuing her stint in rehab. The 20-year-old entered the California facility early this week following a messy weekend. Us Weekly senior writer Joey Bartholomew says the fact that Lohan is getting help is a good thing.
For Lindsay, who was in rehab back earlier this year, and she was leaving a lot, and she was working throughout it, and this rehab is different, and she's staying there. She'll be there for at least a month, and I think everyone's just happy about that.
When did they start having junior high girls be PR spokesperson?
Her name is Joey.
Uh-huh.
J-O-E-Y.
Yeah, all right.
Joey says that Lindsay Lohan may be genetically predisposed to substance abuse.
It runs in her family. Her father had problems with drugs and alcohol, and he, too, served time for a DUI. And so this is something that's genetic.
She must know.
Uh-huh. All right.
Now let's take a little break to spell a word.
Serafine. F-E-R-R-E-F-I-N-E. Therapy.
You are correct. You're the champion.
I think
that's Lindsay Lohan. This is the last. They ought to make Paris Hilton participate in a spelling bee. I think this is the last year I'm going to care about the spelling bee. I think after this year,
what are you going to care about next year?
Next year when the spelling bee happens, I think I'm not going to care about it at all. I think I'm all spelling beed out. Because how many times can we have this story? I mean,
we have it every year.
You know, the funny thing is, as I asked that question rhetorically, I knew you'd have the actual answer. I think I'm at the point where I no longer care about some freakish brainiac kid, who's able to do that. All right.
It was 40 years ago today, the Beatles released a landmark album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in the UK.
Thank you for not doing that stupid headline. Was it written the horrible way? Was it written the cliche way?
It was not, but it was in my head.
I
did everything.
I was thinking that in my head.
Were you tempted to say it?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for not doing it. Thank you, and I'm glad that you didn't do that, just like we never did the whole, we still love him now that he's 64, whatever that stupid Paul McCartney thing when he turned 64. So, has anybody looked at the Oregonian today? Peter Carlin was going to be doing a 40th anniversary piece on
I haven't seen one.
Sgt. Pepper, but I don't know if he did it or not, because he was up.
There may be an Oregonian upstairs.
He was talking to our good friend Craig Adams, who was going to point him towards some DJs who were on in the Summer of Love. Because Carlin emailed me, and he's like, hey, do you know any DJs who were working in Portland Radio in the Summer of Love? And I said, no, of course not. There are no DJs left. There's no, Craig's the last one. So Craig Adams really is the last DJ. So I said that if anybody would know, he would. But apparently he was going to work on some 40th anniversary piece for Sgt. Pepper. So.
Sunburn rates are rising nationally, especially among blacks and Hispanics. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention found that about a fifth of all Americans had four or more sunburns in 2004. Why are we going back 3 years? But the study also showed that half of blacks and 45% of Hispanics reported sunburns, while only about 35% of non-Hispanic whites did. Dermatologists said some dark-skinned folks believe they can't sunburn, and anti-sunburn information has been targeted toward light-skinned people.
Does it actually say? Did the dermatologist actually say dark-skinned folks?
Yes.
They say it while standing on a porch and playing a fiddle?
This is from Florida. Researchers worry that minorities tend to be diagnosed with skin cancer later and have lower survival rates. There are no safe tans. Avoid the sunshine between 10 and 4.
Never leave your home.
Covering up in the sun and using sunblock of at least SPF 15.
Now, is that a thing? Now, it would seem to me that if you have darker skin, you got to get like a different sunblock, right? Because that is... I know so little about science and technology because, for example, so if you've got black skin, so is that an excess, not an excess, but it's like more melanin, right? Is that the deal?
I suppose
that's what I thought.
I don't know how anything works. Well, Scotty's saying more pigment, but I don't know if that's the same thing as melanin or not. I guess it doesn't really affect me. I'm the whitest person you've ever seen on earth. I guess this is news I cannot possibly use. So, there you go. So, for the many one of the many black staff members of the Rick Emerson Show. You just please do it. Please to be noting that. I just hit my teeth into the microphone.
Ow.
I try to avoid the sun at all, ever, because I immediately turn into a lobster, and then I just go back to being the color of milk again. There's just no middle ground, and we talk about this every year. Speaking of stories we do every year, I don't tan, I just burn. So, there you go. Well, let's do one more, and then we'll bring in cross-country Nate, and we'll do the top five road trip songs.
That sounds delightful.
Yes, it does.
More than half of digital video recorder users fast forward through commercials while watching primetime network fare. This according to the first study ever of this. National media researchers began measuring how habits have changed in the estimated 17% of American homes that own DVR, such as the Tivo. On Thursday, the company released a small portion of the data that it gathered from 1,750 DVR homes. The study indicates that DVRs are used frequently among ages 18 to 49. 42% of primetime TV was time-shifted instead of watch live.
Did they really have to do a study to determine that if you have a TiVo, you're likely to use it?
Yes.
That's really what this is? Yep. Imagine how much money must have gone into this survey. Mm-hmm. Let's say you have a TiVo. Do you use it?
You have a choice of this or a sunburn story.
All right.
It shows a 73% increase of people fast-forwarding through commercials that didn't before. There is perhaps less commercial avoidance than we in the industry might think there might be.
Can I just tell you this, though? I got the greatest thing on my TV.
Foolishness.
This is judicious madness.
It gets us closer to a more accurate view of who is watching commercials, said the aging baby boomer, who's clueless to the habits of the average American outside of his age group.
Yes. I was just going to say this, that I have a TiVo. I do not just have a DVR. I have a TiVo, which I'm a proud TiVo user. TiVo people are sort of like Macintosh people. They just go on and on and on and on about it, and I'm fully aware of that. And I lecture people, because people go, well, I have a DVR that's like a TiVo. And someone saying to me that they have a DVR, which is like having a TiVo, is like when I say to Tim, well, I got a Windows and another thing. That's like having an iPod and a Mac.
That's
what I'm saying. And then he's like, your Mr. Hand becomes Mr. Fist. The great thing about TiVo now is if you have broadband, TiVo now does video podcasts direct to your box if you want them, and they now do an Onion Television News. And I got it. It downloads every day to my TiVo, or like three times a week, I think, to my TiVo. And it is like the Onion Radio News of Doyle Redland, but it's television news, and it's done as like a faux CNN kind of a thing. It's fantastic, and it's great. It is fantastic. There's a New York Times video podcast, all that kind of stuff. So there's a bunch of video podcasts that you can get absolutely free. They just sit there, and you just download them whenever you want right onto your TiVo. So there you go. Fantastic. Should I be...
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, let's... Scotty, can we bring... And I just handed you the top five.
I do have it.
All right. Scotty, if we can bring Cross Country Nate into the studio, that'd be fantabulous. Oh, I have an introductory theme here. Let's see, where did my introductory theme go? It was right here. Now it's gone. It was going to be Biggest Ball of Twine in Minnesota, but I don't know where the hell it went. I had Biggest Ball of Twine in Minnesota somewhere. Is it under W for Weird Al? No.
Possibly.
No, but it's not. I don't even know where it went. It's just gone. Well, insert... Oh, is there a whole cross-country Nate folder here? Really?
You pick it or it's Scotty.
Wait, hold on. Scotty has created a theme for Nate. Let me go ahead and just play this here. Let's see. Have you got headphones there? Yeah, there you go. All right, here's the introductory theme Scotty's given me. Is this Lenny D? Why?
What?
I don't understand it. Is this Bad Bad Leroy Brown? Wait, hold on.
An outsider of Chicago fans,
I don't understand.
All right, this is Piano Pat. This is one of the lucky many stops that he's going to get a stop at when he goes to, we got the information on that somewhere floating around here.
Realize that what you're saying, that makes no sense at all.
No.
You're just speaking in sentence fragments, so we're all confused.
Okay.
Let's start again.
It's that piece of paper sitting around here somewhere that kind of gave us the update on...
Oh, sure, that should be easy to find right here.
There's eight pieces of paper. For anybody who's ever seen the studio. Really?
No, this is a...
Haystack Needle.
Right. This is Piano Pat from the Sip and Dip Lounge in Great Falls.
Oh, okay, all right. No, okay, that does make sense, actually. The Sip and Dip, which is, that's the third stop. on this. So let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Cross Country Nate. Hello, sir.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I am dandy, brother. So this way, now this is your last day at work. Now, have you already gone to work, or are you giving your notice today? Are you done for the day?
I went to work. They gave me a party. Then I'm going to go measure a couple more houses.
Fantastic. Now, what is it now? What kind of work do you do? Is it construction, you said, or?
Yeah, I work in the construction industry. I drive around and measure a bunch of houses that need new doors and stuff.
I guess I never even really thought. There's all kinds of jobs you don't even really ever think that people do.
Yeah.
Like, you never really consider exactly that there's a guy whose job it is to measure the door on your house. So,
exactly.
So now they know, now they're cool with you taking time off and traveling across the country?
Yeah, they said I'm welcome back if I need to.
There you go.
So I'm like, all right, thank you.
Awesome.
And you remember the Door Measurers Union?
No union.
Local 32. And so it's you, and her name is Kenesha, is that right?
Yeah, Kenesha and DeLion.
Kenesha and DeLion. And so they are, now are you from here? Are you from Portland?
Yeah, I was born in my parents' house in Vancouver.
Now, have any of you guys gone across the country before? Is this first time?
She's been to D.C., and that's about it.
All right, so this is sort of going to be, you're going to be seeing the country for the first time.
Yep.
It is a weird experience, and not like I'm some big cross-country traveler, but I mean, even just driving... You drive through the Midwest or anything like that, and it's so bizarre you get a couple hours outside of town, and just things start to look really different. Especially you go to the Midwest, and look, I don't mean to knock some of the heartland states, but goddamn, it's just an ugly, hideous-looking place. I mean, it's like drive through Tim probably knows any more about this than I do. You drive to sections of Utah and the Kansas and whatever, and it's just. It's just like a whole lot of flat nothing. I mean, just forever and ever and ever. And then if you drive through like southern Utah, and I don't know if the trip back will bring you through Utah at all.
Yeah, definitely.
And you got to go through southern Utah, and here's why. You drive through southern Utah, and the weirdest thing is that you suddenly look up, and it's like you are in a Roadrunner cartoon. Because southern Utah, southern Utah looks exactly like the Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons. And I'm pretty sure that Chuck Jones actually even modeled that backdrop in the Roadrunner cartoons on southern Utah, where it's like you will see this tiny little sliver of rock that goes up about 500 yards and a huge boulder sitting on top of it, like in the middle of the desert. And you just have no idea how it even came to be formed. It really is the weirdest, coolest place.
That's awesome.
And if you're driving through Bryce, the signs say don't take the rocks, but you got to take one anyway. Stop taking the rocks. There's plenty of rocks.
And
if everybody took a rock, there'll still be rocks left.
And if your car explodes, there'll be helpful Mormons there that will,
yes, they will.
They'll assist you on your... They'll duct tape your car back together and give you a Bible and send
it
away.
Very nice. Nice people.
All right. So your trip... And we put up a map, by the way, at rickemerson.com. Let me see if I can go there.
Yeah, I saw that. Right. That guy that did that was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, this guy, Dave, put this together. And let's see if we can go there right here. So it's a Google map that shows your entire cross-country trip. Let me see if I can load this right here. So, and we'll update this.
Oh, that's really cool.
It is. Yeah, it is very cool. And so we also have, and Scotty, do we have a shirt? Did we get that from Susan?
I will go look into that.
Susan's going to arm you with a station shirt and a bunch of stickers. You can get your photo taken, kind of garden gnome style.
I love the description of this cross-country, Nate. You know, blah, blah, blah. His deaf girlfriend, not just girlfriend.
Yeah, and their one-year-old son.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he's got his email address up here if people want to suggest other points of interest. So he's got, like, an entire map here showing across the country as you're going. So your first stop is... Maryhill, and what time are you guys heading out tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning. We're going to put some new tires on in the morning and head out.
What kind of car do you have? You have like a Subaru or something?
Subaru,
right?
Forester, yeah.
All right. Have you got a camera? Are you going to be taking photos?
Oh, yeah. We just got a new camera. It's beautiful.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. So you can send those to us, or you can, I don't know if you have a chance, mm-hmm. if you're going to be able to access email or whatever.
Yeah, we've got our laptop, wireless internet. We're ready. We just started our MySpace page last night.
Fantastic. So. Do you want to give that out?
MySpace, and the name is Do Good Road Trip. As it
D-O-G-O-O-D?
Yep.
Do Good Road Trip, all one word?
Yep.
All right, MySpace.com/Do Good Road Trip. All right, fantastic. So I'll tell you what, we're going to do, so do we have the top five, Ben? So in honor of your excursion, we're going to roll today's top five. These are the top five road trip songs, as decided by Scotty J.
All right, Kenesha will love them.
See, you can make that joke and I can't.
Oh, she's a good humor, baby.
We're counting it all, and there's counting's the best thing you'll do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, as created by the one and only Scotty J in honor of Cross Country Nate's road trip, which begins tomorrow with his girlfriend Kenesha and son the Lion. These are the top five road trip songs. I take no responsibility for the quality of this list.
With honorable mention, we have Ozzy Osbourne and the Muppets, Born to be Wild.
See, we're starting off weak. Let me just... Oh, God. Scotty, did you really put an Ozzy Osbourne Muppet song on here?
Why, yes, I did, Rick.
Why? Why did you do that?
Yeah, you got to hear this. This is a better version than all the versions you usually listen to.
Is this going to make me want to kill myself, yes or no?
No, yeah. I think you're going to love it. Do you like Ozzy?
Yeah, there I like... Go. Okay, I like ice cream, too, but I don't like it wrapped around bacon.
I do.
All right. Oh, God.
Miss Piggy, welcome.
Ozzy Osbourne? Boy, did I open the wrong door. I'm sorry to bother you.
Oh, Miss Piggy, you're not bothering me, so stick around. We're going to rock!
Ozzy, chill.
Why do you own this?
We're going to rock the place down. Come on.
I really don't know, but I'd definitely take this on the road if I was doing a road trip.
Yeah, me and you.
Sarah, there was this time when there was this rock star named Ozzy Osbourne, and he was really cool and evil.
Yeah.
There was this time like 100 years ago when Ozzy was scary.
This is actually one of the coolest versions of this song because of his voice.
I'm not disputing that Ozzy covering the song is an interesting idea. I just don't understand at what point it occurred to them to have a felt-covered pig sing along with it. Okay, I can't play this anymore. Tim?
At number five, Sniff and the Tears with Driver's Seat.
What year is this from?
Man, I'm going to say 70s. I don't know, actually. It could be early 80s, like 80, 81, somewhere in there.
I would have preferred to hear Ventura Highway. Oh, man, I haven't heard this forever.
You don't know how many songs there are for road trips. I can make a list of 500 songs, easy. There's all kinds of stuff that is not included on the list,
pretty
obviously.
Great. Now, Nate, somebody told me, now, do you and your girlfriend perform music?
Yes, we do.
Now, if I can ask, now, if she doesn't hear, how does that work, if I can ask?
I look at her while I play music, and she reads my lips and signs it and dances around.
Oh, that's pretty great. So she does, like, an interpreting thing.
Yeah.
While you, cool. Now, what kind of music is it?
It's like an acoustic, folky, rocky, good stuff.
Oh, Scotty, actually, now, is it true Scotty said we have some? Okay, we'll play some of that later, then.
Excellent.
Yeah, Sniff, cool. Sniff and the Tears is one of those bands that I don't even know... I can't conjure up an image of them. I don't know what they look like.
Well, I bet they had long, shaggy, scooby hair.
Totally. I bet they're kind of one of those Stillwater-looking bands.
And they're definite one-hit wonder, because I can't think of hearing...
Like Question Mark and the Mysterious.
Any other songs.
Do one song, bam, banish forever. All right, these are the top five road trip songs, according to Scotty J.
At number four, it's Eddie Rabbit, Driving My Life Away.
Eddie Rabbit's dead. I know that definitively. He's dead.
Road trip.
We're not going to have any discussion. We're not going to have any argument about that. He's dead.
I think he had cancer, so I'm not sure exactly how he died, but I think that's how he died.
I'm not even sure if I like this song. I've just heard it so much I can't even make up my mind. What was his other? Oh, I Love a Rainy Night.
Love a Rainy Night. I like that one better.
He had a couple more, too.
He did a really terrible cover of The Wanderer by what's it, Del Shannon? No, Dion and the Belmonts. Who did The Wanderer?
Dion.
I've never heard this.
Without the Belmonts. You've never heard this?
No.
How old are you, Nate, if I can ask?
I'm 23.
23, that would explain it. Ask one of your, if you have like a much older sibling or ask your mom and dad. They probably did a lot of work listening to this on an AM radio while, like, I don't know, scrubbing the porch outside.
I remember listening to this when I was a little kid.
Totally.
I helped my dad in the garage, and this would be playing in, like, a little AM radio.
While he listened to a full service station that offered Paul Harvey and farm reports in the afternoon. That's totally the kind of station to play this. I don't think there's anybody left to play this kind of country.
Maybe we should.
No. I believe Piano Pat does.
Stop it. This seems like, I mean, this is an interesting composition. It's not a bad song. I just heard it to death. This seems like it ought to be covered by somebody. This seems like, I don't know, like one of those, you know, like some Brad Paisley type guy ought to be covering this. All right, these are the top five road trip songs.
At number three, the REO Speedwagon, Roll With The Changes.
Am I? Oh, no, I'm thinking of Taking on the Run. What is this song?
Well, this song to me is, you know, rolling down the... It's really about changing, you know, going with the punches or whatever. But I always look at it as you're rolling down the road and you know, the scenery is changing. And so it's kind of a good road trip tune. Plus, it's got a good, you know, toe-tapping thing where you can, you know, slam on the pedal and speed up when you're in the middle of Wile E. Coyote country.
Are you a big REO Speedwagon fan?
No, but I do like Wile E. Coyote.
Okay. Thanks so much. Are the kids done with REO Speedwagon today, Nate?
No.
No. That was certainly no hesitation at all. Hey, let me ask you this, Nate.
Yes.
I have a question. We were talking about Primer Gray Camaros the other day and what kind of song you hear coming out of a Primer Gray Camaro. And, I mean, we were had a lot of white trash rock. Let me ask you. And then Scotty had tried to be down with the kids. He had created this top five that he thought the kids were down with.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the All-American Rejects. And who just don't sound trashy enough to me? What do the white trash kids of today listen to? If you're like, you know, if you're in your early 20s and you just, you know, you just sit there and esticate it, just, you know, putting a lot of Kodiak in your mouth. What do the white trash kids today listen to?
I think the white trash kids my age today still listen to Alice in Chains a lot.
So it's a lot of grunge?
A lot of Metallica, 90s stuff still.
Yeah. All right.
White trashy kind of cut out in the 2000s.
So it's, they've just sort of, it's still the same type of music, just later, it's later on, like a later generation of rock.
Yeah, Dreams and Memories of the Mullets.
Fantastic. All right. These are the top five road trip songs, according to Scotty J. All right, number two?
Number two is Willie Nelson, On the Road Again.
Fantastic. You can't...
No, you can't.
This is great. You can't front on it. You can't say anything about Willie Nelson. He's going to be playing at the Clark County Amphitheater July 4th with the old 97s and the Drive-By Truckers, who are fantastic. Did you see that they dropped that pot charge against him?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they nailed him for having weed. First of all, do you ever think about certain celebrities and you wonder why, if you're a cop, you just don't pull them over constantly, like when the end of the month comes and you're low on your quota? You know what I mean? Like, wouldn't, if you were some cop and you needed to, I don't know, whatever, you had to get your minimum monthly arrested, and like, wouldn't you just be camping outside of Willie Nelson's house or something? Or one of those guys from Cypress Hill? Like, you'd just be sitting there all day and you just bust him every time he walks out the front door.
Yes. I would do that.
Yeah, his defense just ought to be like, I'm Willie Nelson. I'm Willie Nelson, and who are you?
Exactly.
All right.
At Snoop Dogg's house.
Here's the number one road trip song, according to Scotty J. Tim Riley?
Judas Priest and Riding on the Wind.
Well done, Scotty. And
nice high five.
He held up his hand.
No, you held up your hand, too.
I did not. He held up his hand to high five me. I
think he reluctantly Scotty. Put it up, but...
Isn't Judas Priest on every countdown we do?
I don't know, but when I threw this one in there, I had to listen to it three times before sending it off to, you know...
To be sure that it was appropriately
rocking. I liked it that much that I love the song. This one is definitely a road trip song. You may have not heard this before, but
if you're 50,
add it to your iPod.
I always sing this when I'm driving into Beaverton.
I can totally picture you on the Max. Picture you in your boxy old lady car. Judas Priest blaring at the windows.
Let's stop Olive Garden.
Like a big crystal hanging from your rearview mirror.
I can't wait to get a piece of cornbread at my recalendar.
Fantastic. All right, Nate, what time do you guys head out tomorrow morning?
We're just going before noon.
So all right,
man. Let's start going.
Excellent. You're going to head to Maryhill, and then I'm not sure exactly where you're going to be by Monday, but I don't know. Stay in touch with Scotty. Let us know where you are. We'll get photos. We'll keep some photos on the website of you, and we'll check in to see where you guys are as you travel across the country. And if you have questions or there's sort of, intermediary destinations, you know, that you want to questions of the audience, will help us figure that out.
Of course, yeah.
All right. Best to you, best to Kenesha, best to the Lion, and travel safe, and we'll talk to you guys as you head out on the road on Monday.
Thank you very much.
Cross country day, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Back after this, coming up in the next hour, the Young Immortals, Scott Daly, Court and Fatboy, Like Us at 3 with Flash Friday. You say, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I don't know where I put my biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. That's a weird city. Anyway, it's around here somewhere.
You believe what I do?
Nothing worse than me. Yes?
I was asking if you could give the legal ID.
You mean that we're KCMD Portland? Bam! 503-733-2970. We're going to do some news with Tim Riley in just a skosh, followed by Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com, who admits up front that he has nothing to promote, nothing to review, nothing to offer us today. There's no content or entertainment of any kind to be found in this segment. Fantastic. Young Immortals coming up later on. Those guys are in the kitchen tuning up for their gig or whatever it is musicians do. They're commencing to rock. Yes, they are. Don't be nervous. Ladies and gentlemen of the Ministry of Truth, the Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Paris Hilton's mandatory makeover from designer duds to jail-issued jumpsuits is fast approaching. For 23 days, no more Bobby socks and blue jeans with the 26-year-old heiress. She has to report to the Hooskow by 11:59 p.m. Monday. This is the Century Regional Detention Facility. Where is it? It's 13 years old. It's about 5 miles south of downtown L.A. It's an all-female facility, and it's a two-story concrete building sitting in the middle of an industrial yard behind the wrong side of the tracks and next to the bustling freeway. She'll be housed in a special needs unit.
Special needs? Really?
Mm-hmm. A special needs unit. And like many inmates in the special needs area, she will take her meals in her cell and will be allowed outside the 12-by-8-foot space at least an hour each day to shower, watch television in the day room, participate in outdoor recreation, or gab on the phone.
This sounds like one of them country club
prisons. Wait, does she love to talk on the phone the whole time or just during that hour?
Just during that hour, I think. The rest of the time she'll sit herself and...
And not on a cell phone, it's a public payphone.
Yeah. It's not cruel enough for me.
She'll have to surrender her clothing and jewelry in exchange for her requisite orange jumpsuit. She'll also get a toothbrush, a tube of toothpaste, soap, a comb, deodorant, shampoo, and shaving implements. Doesn't say where she must shave. Along with jail-issued pencil, stationery, envelopes, and stamps.
Does it say exactly, what kind of food she's going to be served with the meals are?
I'm looking here. She'll have a polished metal mirror. She can buy a compact eyeshadow, an eyebrow pencil, and a package of hair coloring from the jail commissary. And she can draw that from a prepaid account. She'll be allowed to have 3 books and magazines each week, like she'd ever read anything like that. No larger than 4 by 6 inches. No special arrangements have been made. They treat all inmates alike. But
I'm becoming...
That sucks because she's allowed to buy hair dye, which means her hair won't look like crap.
Yeah, but it's probably just for men.
But that's the thing, it's probably cheap, though. It's probably really cheap. Not like they spring from the really
expensive
stuff.
Somebody needs to raid that and just leave nothing but like turquoise eyeliner and like black hair dye.
Fantastic. That's the thing is she can put as much money in her account, I think, as she wants before she goes into jail, but I don't think. Right. But she can't buy anything that they don't sell there. In other words, I don't think that you can't have like somebody from home bring you makeup. She has to just it's like the vending machine in the kitchen. She has to choose from whatever they have. So I think she might. There's a better than average chance she might still look hideous. I just don't know. You know, the thing is, here's the weird thing about stories like this. The stories like this turn me into my mother-in-law, who just constantly complains that prison isn't harsh enough. Constantly talking, well, all they get is 3 hots and a cot, which is a phrase I detest, by the way. And she's always saying to prisoners, you know, there's not enough beating and shoving into ditches or whatever.
I think that's true.
Well, I think it's true when we're talking about Paris Hilton. Stories like this turn me into just some fire-breathing conservative about the American penal system. So... Anyway, the only bright spot here is that, as Sarah noted earlier, you know that there's somebody who's going to get photographs of her. I mean, photographs of her will leak out. So, and I just want, I mean, I'm just saying.
No, she goes to the commissary to buy her oil of Olay.
I may have, I know this is a horrible thing to say, but I'm just hoping that at least one of those photographs, she just has a huge bruise somewhere on a delicate area of her body. That's all I'm hoping.
You're a terrible person.
I know, but look, I just
want a crying picture.
See, we're such bad people. Let me bleep that. Okay, hold on. Here's what you just missed.
I can work up about it.
No. Here's what you just missed. Sarah is so worked up about Paris Hilton that she just used the F word. I think that's the first time.
I didn't say the whole thing.
No, but I'm saying in this studio, I think that's the first time we've had to dump you for profanity.
I'm sorry,
in a long
just
time.
Just infuriates me.
I can tell. It effing infuriates you.
I guess so.
Well, she's going to be writing a diary the entire time, which she'll be able to sell for millions of dollars after she gets out, pending her entire time in there.
I've never seen you so angry. You were just so... And the best thing is you just said it without even thinking about it. You're just writing in her effing... And then you caught yourself about halfway through. And I'm with you on this. Here's my other
anger. This is nothing but a good thing for her.
My other anger about Paris Hilton... by the way, stems from this. Not only is she going to be able to write about it, not only is she going to be able to sell this as some sort of a journal, but you know that she will now use this as some sort of weird street cred chip. You know what I mean? That she'll talk, well, as somebody who spent some time in prison, let me tell you. And she's going to go on and she's going to
market a movie of the week.
And long enough... she will use this prison experience just long enough... to distract everybody from the fact that she's just such a terrible person by mouthing some sort of sentiment about how she's going to work for the reform of America's prison system. Because the people I met inside taught me a few things about life. And I would say that America's prison system is the last great bastion of blah, 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 blah that's got to be...
You never hear her speak. I can't see her
saying
that.
She'll say through Elliot Mintz. She'll issue a statement. She will issue statements through her publicist saying that... And the friendships I made inside will last me the rest of my life. And I will work for the advancement of my fellow inmates, blah, blah, blah. And she's totally going to use this as some sort of a, how she's all hard now. How she's a tough. Before we, any other profanity you'd like to use before we go on?
I'm sorry.
No, it's funny. It was amusing.
It really does bother me, though.
The great thing about your profanity now is it obviously wasn't contrived. It came from a very angry about Paris Hilton place. Fantastic. Scotty, can we bring Scott Daly into the studio? And this is probably a good time to let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from FilmFeverRadio.com. One of the only Scott Daly joining us now in the studio. Hello, sir. How are you?
I am well. I'm amazed that Sarah... You know, pulled a Scotty on the air.
Did you hear it? Did you hear the pre-delay feed?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. That was fantastic.
She caught herself, but a little too late.
That's okay. Well, you know, the Paris Hilton just... I would say that Paris Hilton infuriates me more than any other celebrity that I can currently conjure up in my head. I mean, more than anybody else, more than Britney Spears, more than anybody. Like, I'm way past all the people in the Anna Nicole Smith story. I mean, I'm not angry at any of those people anymore. It's just her.
The thing with Paris Hilton is I just don't care.
No, I care enough that I want to see her savagely beaten in prison by
somebody. That would be great.
That's what I'm saying.
How about a pay-per-view event?
No,
Live from prison.
No,
or have a Paris cam in prison.
Oh, somebody should be hiding secret cameras in there right now.
Well, you know, she lives in California, though. She is a resident of California, legally speaking. So I'm not even... The thing is, I'm not actually sure. We should ask Jim Roop about this some other day. I'm not sure that she can actually make money off being in prison. I'm not sure that she is allowed to profit off of...
Did Martha Stewart?
Yeah, she's not a resident of California, though. She's a resident of New York.
Mm.
In California, there is, I believe it is called, God, what is it called? It's something like the Menendez Law or the O.J. Law. It might be the Manson Law, actually.
Yeah.
There is a law now in California about being allowed to profit off a crime or prison
for wrongdoing.
Time.
That
yes, exactly.
Make sense.
So it's entirely possible that she might not be able to make any money off of this. So, anywho. Scott Daly. What have you come to review today?
Absolutely nothing.
Fantastic. Well, isn't even opening this week?
Yeah, the big one opening this week is the latest Kevin Costner film called Mr. Brooks.
Oh, I read some reviews.
All right, you get Kevin Costner film, who plays a serial killer, filmed in Portland. So you know it's going to be a whiz-bang of a film.
I don't even remember them shooting it here.
In Portland. Yeah, they did. It was about a year ago, actually.
Yeah.
Downtown and stuff. Dane Cook is in it and Demi Moore is in it.
Fantastic. Dane Cook and Kevin Costner. Well, that is genius.
It's a pretty serious role, so I don't know. Well, yes, I know.
So you've seen it?
No, I have not seen it yet.
No, of course not. Why would no one's going to see that?
It did screen.
We can ask this question next month and the answer from everybody will be the same. No.
It did screen last week, but we opted to record a show instead. So.
Yeah, and I got another.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of, it's just... Oh, God damn it. Don't, let me just say this real quickly. Speaking of movies and Pirates of the Caribbean 3.
Oh, don't get me going. Okay,
no, I'm not. It's not even about Pirates of the Caribbean 3.
Just the whole summer so far.
As such, I'm just saying that because of this manufactured hype around Pirates of the Caribbean 3, there are now not one, but three different pseudo-pirate ships that are part of the stupid Rose Festival.
Oh, God.
And I'm coming across the bridge this morning on my bike, and I had to wait because they had to put the goddamn bridge up to let these... And the ships just go through, like, at a snail's pace, just, like, as slow as you can... Like, have you done this where you're... And it's always... It's never right as you've gotten over the bridge. It's never right as you finish the bridge. It's always right as you're going up the bridge.
Yeah, yeah.
And the stupid gates come down on the Hawthorne Bridge. And you sit near there like, well, what? Ah, and then the gates go down, and then it's like an hour before the bridge actually lifts, and then this is what always happens. You're sitting there, and I mean, I'm not even in a car. If you're in a car, you're even angrier because you're using gas, it's hot, you're breathing exhaust. At least I'm on my bike and get a little sun, whatever. I'm sitting there on the bridge is raising, and I do that thing of going, well, where's the boat? And the boat is like 100 miles away.
Still underneath the St. John's Bridge.
Seriously, it's like way down there. The boat is not even moving. The boat's like 100 miles away. It's moving. It's facing, I swear to Christ, the other direction. They raise the bridge. Then the little pirate ship starts turning. Turning. Turning.
Okay.
Uwana. Turning, and then it just, and then of course, what happens then? As I'm sitting there, a bus pulls up next to me on the bridge.
Oh God!
The bridge is vibrating under my feet, and all I'm thinking about is how the bridge is going to collapse, and I'm going to tumble into the ocean, and or you know, into the river, and the river is going to be so full of other bicyclists they will never have time to fish us all out, and I'm probably going to die because of this stupid goddamn pirate boat that is still turning
or the steering in the water.
And then the boat finally starts, and then I realize there's not just one, there's three. There's three of them.
So they've got three pirate boats docked
not
right
only
now.
That,
oh my
not
God.
Only that, but of course you know this, that the boat passes underneath the bridge, and then you've got to wait for the boat to be 100 miles on the other side of the bridge before they will lower the stupid thing.
So tell me, when you're riding your bike and the bridge goes up, do you ever just think to yourself, I can make it?
No, I did. This morning, I think about how I could circumvent those gates.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? I'd be the guy where, like, they'd start to raise the thing, and then they'd lower it again, and I'd get, you know, my legs would be pinched off or something. That's no good. The whole thing just infuriates me.
I always get stuck on the bridge for the test run. And that is the most frustrating thing ever, because there is no boat.
Nothing's happening.
And they just leave it there. And I always get stuck next to some jackass in a pickup truck standing next to me, like, saying, like, hey, baby, how are you doing? As I'm like, you can't go anywhere because you're stuck at the rail, and you're just stuck having to listen to it.
Hey, baby, I got a Coors.
Some Johnny Lunch Bucket leaning out of his truck and trying to give you a smooth come on. Jesus. Put that bike in the back of my tail bed, or whatever the say is. I think that there should be a rule that all of these boat, and I know this sounds like more disproportionate anger, but I got to tell you, everybody's been stuck in it. Within the last month, probably, everybody listening has been stuck on one of these stupid bridges while they're raising it. And then the worst part is, as I'm sitting down there and I'm looking down the river at the other bridges and going through this thing that goes through that I think about in my head every time this happens, that, you know, the other bridges don't have to raise because they were just smart enough to build a bridge taller. So... Anyway, I think they ought to have to do all of these boat crossings in non-peak traffic hours. There ought to be some law that trains and boats have to go before 9 a.m., or you know what I mean, not before 9 a.m., but I mean before rush hour starts or after rush hour is over. If you are a train or a boat, you got to go before 6 a.m. or like after 7 p.m.
But
that's it. Otherwise, your ass can just sit there and wait.
But let's think about this.
God,
it is Rose Festival.
I hate people.
And all laws and logical sense goes out the window.
Oh, I know. I know. Because everybody's got to get their fat ass down to the park so they can eat a funnel cake and ride something
center.
Put together by meth users. All right, let me... what have we got to do? We have before we... Well, we'll do this. We'll take a break. We have the Young Immortals guys coming up, and we'll audition a few people we'll audition a few people for the Beat Tim Riley for a Day and a Half contest, and we'll do that later on in the second half of this hour. What is this sound that you brought us today, Scott?
I brought some audio clips of our Star Wars commentary we did last weekend.
I was there
for
part of that.
Thousands, and we were all amazed you were there, because everyone said, oh, Rick will be here. It's like, oh, okay.
No, I was
okay.
There.
But yeah, you showed up.
I wasn't there for A New Hope, but I was there for most of Empire, and I stayed for Jedi, even though I didn't want to.
Right. It was the best thing about that commentary is we did Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi, just back to back to back.
And by the time we got the Jedi, no one even cared.
We were just like,
no one even cared.
You know, we could stop it now and just...
All right.
Pretend. So I brought some sound from it. It's clean. It's edited up. It's really clean. But okay. It might be more fun if Fatboy's in, because he was part of the.
Well, then we have to break. Then we're gonna have to break for a play.
Okay.
So we'll take a break here. We'll come back. Young Immortals. We'll get to some of these sound bites here. We'll talk to Court and Fatboy just a little bit. And if we have time, we'll audition some folks for the Beat Tim Riley for a Day and a Half contest. And we've got the few film questions as well. And that's all in the next 35 minutes. Join in as we engage in a mad dash to try to get some of these things done before the show ends. Like us in Flash Friday at 3, Don and Mike at 7. Don't go anywhere. The Rick Emerson Show continues next.
Less than an hour.
Oh, for the love of God.
Aircraft from here will join from around the world.
Kill you all.
I'm just a little anxious to get up there and whoop E.T.'s ass, that's all. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Let's keep the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
That's annoying.
That's the worst part.
Mankind, huh? Words should have new meaning for all of us today.
We're going to live on.
We're going to be at a barbecue. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. And what the hell is that smell?
You know, the best thing about that is when I went to record our show last night, Aaron was putting this together,
right?
And he was just laughing,
was giggling to himself. I know. It's funny. And I'm laughing on the inside.
Every time I hear that.
Less than an hour.
No, it is funny.
And hearing that isolated, I never, you're right. He's the most boring.
Our blandest actor.
Delivery is.
Aircraft from here will join others.
I can barely open my mouth to speak. We're here with Scott Dowling from FilmFeverRadio.com. In just a few, we'll have our good friends, the Young Immortals, are going to come in and favor us with some of their musical styling. They gave me the most self-serving press release, by the way. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, they're nothing but shameless self-promoters.
Listen to this. I swear to God, it says, because it's like an Amnesty International thing, and it says, the event will feature Portland darlings, the Young Immortals. They wrote this themselves. Hey, Scotty, pleased to be bringing, if you can round up Fatboy and bring him in, we'll get that business settled, and then we'll do the band. Hi, yeah. Chuck, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick, I'm going out to the Grand Lodge at McMinimum's out in Forest Grove this weekend.
Uh-huh.
And they have two movies. Well, they have three movies. Meet the Robinsons, 300, and Blades of Glory. Now, I've seen none of them. I'm leaning towards either Blades of Glory or 300.
300.
Okay, I think that depending. I mean, obviously, if you're going to McMinimum's, you're going to be drinking some.
Oh, yeah.
So it just depends. 300 and Blades of Glory are like the complete opposites of each other.
Are you
other.
Going by yourself?
Sure.
Are you taking a woman?
Yeah.
Well, she'll dig the dudes in 300 because they're all ripped and whatnot.
Blades of Glory is a funny movie. 300 is a great movie. So really kind of the mindset that you're in right now or are going to be should determine that.
And you got to see.
The boy meet the Robinsons like the plague.
And you know what? In like 5 years, no one will remember Blades of Glory, but everybody will remember 300.
Exactly.
300 is the more.
I'm looking for 300.
Yeah, 300 is the more important movie, and it's entertaining.
And it's a fantastic. It's not as entertaining.
And it's only $3.
Totally, and it'll pump you full of manly energy. You'll want to go punch
there
people.
Go.
And it's a beautiful.
Yeah.
Film.
Pirate joke.
Oh no.
All right. Okay.
How do you revive a dead pirate?
How?
CPR.
Thanks so much. All right, there you go.
I heard the new Pirates movie got an R rating.
Oh. Don't ever speak again. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from our sister station, Rock 101 KUFO Court. Fatboy, hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, let's get the pimping of your crap out of the way. Go.
Tonight, Baghdad Theater. It is Dazed and Confused, 11 o'clock, a meager $3 to get in the door. You can see one of the greatest high school movies of all time.
Mm-hmm. Summer starts officially at 11 p.m. tonight at the
Baghdad. That's fantastic. What a great film, too.
Yeah, it is.
It's so much. It's fantastic.
You gonna be there?
Yes. I'm going to really, really try. Yeah. Yeah, it's a matter of getting. No, my wife
really,
is home.
Really, really try.
My wife is home at 8 o'clock from
work.
That's
commitment.
I'm going to say, hey, how are you? And then go. So,
Sarah, are you going to be there?
I'll be there.
You know, I don't know what
she
I'm doing tonight. Maybe.
You know what you're going to do.
Oh,
tonight.
I know what I'm doing.
You know what you're going to do.
No.
Yes. Well, let's get to it.
Look at him being all business. Come on.
We're trying to get everything done.
No, I got like 900 things I got to do with it. 28 minutes.
You got a band waiting in the kitchen.
Rick, you're not squelching on this.
All right,
you're done.
Let's get to the bet here.
Okay,
so the original bet between y'all and this program, we were playing for sponsorships here. Either you would sponsor the show or I would sponsor your show.
Yeah.
Was whether the Transformers, the movie, would take in $145 million in its first, 5 days?
Yes, five days.
Okay. How would you like now to weasel out of this?
We're not weaseling out of it. What happened is Michael Bay, being the crackhead that he is, decided
it'd be cool to open a movie on a Tuesday because no one goes to work on a Tuesday. Those are his actual words.
Right.
Let's just move it back.
Okay. So the studio actually indulged him and said, okay, fine, we'll open it on a Tuesday.
So now it's a 6 day.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is,
but before we get into this, I would like to point out that you are the one that's been trying to get out of this bet the entire time.
I haven't been trying to get out of anything. I'm confident in the bet.
We have this bet written up on a dry erase board in our office, and every time you come in, you look at the dry erase board and shake your head and look at the floor.
I shake my head out of premature pity for you. Because it's not going to make $145 million. There's no way.
Well, this is the thing. We're trying to figure out how to still pull 5 days out of this new 6 day weekend, a creature that is never existed ever before. And I decided yesterday, you know what, I'm just going to make it simple. I'm going to make it a 6 day bet and up my bet to $160 million in 6 days.
Which is fair.
Yeah. I'm adding 15.
What is 100? What is 145 divided by 5?
I don't know. That's math, man.
It's 25 million.
$25 million.
So if you're adding another day, you got to add $25 million to it. You got to make it 170.
I think that sounds fair.
Well, in your face.
Think about this. Now, the real question is, if they do it on a Tuesday, is that going to be like they did with Pirates on a Thursday?
Yeah.
Start the 8 o'clock showing, or are they going to show at midnight?
I don't know. If you're going to prorate it out fairly, you got to divide the original bet by you got to divide $145 million by 5, which is $25 million, and add that on to adding one more day.
This just seems sort of patently unfair because you're not actually even putting up a figure.
This is sort of patently unfair.
There's the comeback.
That's the best you can do.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm the only one putting a figure out here. I'm even making it simpler. I'm giving you a figure
right now. You add $25 million.
Well, the whole thing was you thought it was going to make no money. I said it's going to make this much money.
Let's bet on it. If you think it's going to make $25 million a day, you think it's going to make $25 million a day. Be a man.
But that's not how it works. It doesn't work all 25 million blocks. That's an average. I'm saying
6 days, 160.
We're going to have to bring. We're going to have to continue this next week.
Okay.
Sarah's going to come over here and punch me. So
all right.
You're
a band. They don't want to hear us arguing about the box office for the movie about robots.
They're in there going,
we're not going to have time to play the single.
Exactly.
Get the band in.
All right, Court and Fatboy, Rock 101 tonight. Rock 101 tonight from 7 to...
7 to 11.
7 to 11, 7 to midnight, whatever. But go to see at the Baghdad tonight. Days of Confused, 11 o'clock, $3.
There you go.
Fantastic.
All right, thanks.
See? Tell me I'm not a team player. All right. Be gone. Be gone, Jay Evans.
Bye, guys.
PhD. All right, Scotty, can we bring the Young Immortals into the studio now? I'm sorry, Portland Darlings, the Young Immortals to the studio. Portland Darlings, the Young Immortals to the studio. And Scott, I'm going to have to... Yeah, I'll have to...
Yeah,
thanks, Scotty D.
All right. It's 503-733-2970. Now entering the studio, this band, how did we even hear about these guys first?
They messaged me on MySpace, actually, one day, because they have that song Hot for Sarah, and I guess they were just kind of sweeping MySpace and finding all the different Sarahs.
It is a great marketing plan.
It's a pretty genius marketing campaign. So I got it and listened to it, and it was pretty catchy.
I don't know if that was their plan or not, but, I mean, if it wasn't, they should say that it is, because the idea of writing a song about a girl named Sarah... And then going on MySpace and just every Sarah within like a 30-square-mile radius. I wrote you this song. So, all right, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Portland Darlings, the Young Immortals here. Let's just go around. And I know you guys introduced yourselves already, but I'm retarded and don't remember anybody's names. So are you guys the entire band?
Yeah.
All right, so let's introduce all the way around here.
Well, I'm Jacob Ray.
I'm Scotty Gervais.
I'm Michael Phillips A.
Fantastic. All right. So I'm going to read this to get this out of the way here so people know kind of where you're going to be. Amnesty International of Oregon, proud to present the first ever Rock for Rights concert this Saturday, June 2nd at the Hawthorne Theater. Doors at 7:30. All proceeds go to ending the atrocities in Darfur and stopping violence against women. The event will feature Portland Darlings, the Young Immortals, who are known for their countless hours of performing music for charity and for writing press releases that try to get them girls. Lead guitarist Jacob Ray says, our band is most likely known for both our international and domestic efforts. for the children.
Oh,
jeez. Concert, I swear to God, it says that. The concert features several other local bands, which can be found at the Young Immortals MySpace page. Tickets are $10, can be purchased direct through Tickets West via phone at 503-224-TIXX. All right, hello, how are y'all?
Awesome.
Excellent.
I don't know if that really went according to plan, but that was great.
Sound good to me.
Yeah, the press.
I don't even know. It could be crap. It could be made up. I don't even know. This could all be fabricated. So I'm just kind of Ron Burgundy. You put it in front of me, and I just read it. I read it as written, my friend. All right. So we heard about you guys first because of the Hot for Sarah song. Now, can I ask, is that written about a real Sarah?
I plead the fifth on that one.
Ah, I see. Mm. See, it's totally, that's what it is. Baby, I wrote it for you.
You wrote it for Sarah, of course.
Yeah, see, oh, yes, that's what I'm talking about. All right. And then... Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. So let's, first and foremost, we'll go ahead and have you guys do that. We'll take a look at the clock, see where we are. And I know you guys have another actual single and maybe a surprise for us. But we'll see where the clock puts us.
All right.
So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the Young Immortals. Because I know you guys actually have, because that's not really even the single, right? That's the one we just sort of latched onto.
Yeah.
You guys have an actual single, and then, I guess, should I give away, they've actually brought, apparently, a Portland song, right? Because we've been talking so much about this so-called Portland anthem that is, like, on the list of things we've got to get to. But you guys have actually written the Portland song.
True. That's right. We were listening when you were trying to get people to call in and write, or...
And so you just started to grab the ball and just ran with it?
Stole it from
well, we were both listening, and right after work, we...
Well, let's do this. Why don't you go ahead and let's, we'll, because you guys have got this actual single out. Should go ahead and do that. We'll kind of take that into the break, give a good chunk of that, take it into the break, and then we'll come back and we'll kind of conclude things on the other side.
Cool.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a little bit of their actual single here. We'll break after that. We'll come back. We'll have the Portland song. We'll have Lycus at 3, Thonomike at 7. Once again, the Young Immortals. Go ahead. Thank you.
out there will know that Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru were not blown up. They were given a slow blaster burn.
I did not do.
I thought they were set on fire.
No, a slow blaster burn is when they put the blasters on the lowest setting, so they told you down and gently cook you, gently. Cook you from the feet up.
The first two or three times I saw
right there. That's pretty gruesome.
They added that specifically to get a PG, because they were afraid if it was G rated.
If it was G, no one would go. So that's pretty gruesome.
Yeah.
That freaked me out.
It's revealed in Star Wars RPG Journal number 5, they were killed by...
Are you kidding?
You guys are such retards.
Isn't you drunk?
Fantastic. There you go. The Marathon Star Wars commentary from Scott Daly, Aaron Duran, Jason Crump, Fatboy Roberts, myself, Clyde Lewis, Diana from downtown, Prime, Boba Fett, Chris, thousand people. You can hear it at FilmFeverRadio.com. FilmFeverRadio.com. Real quickly, before we rejoin the Young Immortals here, we got this. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, what's up? Hey, Immortals, that was awesome. This is Bobcat.
Hey, it's Bobcat.
What's up? Hey, I'll see you guys tomorrow. Good job, fellas.
Bobcat known to you? Is he your super fan?
Oh, yeah,
he's
a good man. Right. Yeah, we met him at the listening
party. Oh, that's right, that's right. He gave me a lot of long, lingering, drunken hugs. Yeah, like, I love your show. Let me hug you and hold you in my embrace for an hour.
It takes 5 years off your life.
All right, so this is, so that last song was called The Fever, right?
That's right.
That's a great, because Sarah and I were talking in the hallway, and a lot of times...
I never really know what to expect when you have, you know, bands in the
queue. Sorry, a lot of times bands come in, and it's not so much the experience here in Portland, but like I would when I was working in other markets, you get bands that come in and they either are terrible or they have like a single and then everything else is awful. So we've been really lucky in Portland that a lot of the bands that we know or that listen to the show or whatever just have, you know, they're great songwriters. So that that single, which is called The Fever, is really good.
Thank you.
But we played a few weeks ago this terrible, terrible, like smooth jazz R&B Portland thing. And it was so awful and it purported to be a Portland song. And I was like, you know, screw that. We're going to write our own Portland anthem, which is going to happen, by the way. It's not, it's one of those things that I mentioned repeatedly, but it will happen. In the meantime, in between time, though, y'all have written your own, right? So this is your own take of the Portland song?
Yes.
But specifically for the Rick Emerson Show.
Thanks. Oh, really?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, one more time, Jake, Scotty, and Michael, the Young Immortals.
Do you live your life on overdrive? Are you tired of the 9-to-5? Does it seem like you never have no time for fun? Take a little advice from me and give the boot to reality. Come on down to Portland, Oregon. We can cruise for chicks up and down Burnside.
In Second and Cooch, you can get a special ride.
There's rose gardens here and past blue ribbon beer.
And at least 3 dozen strip clubs I ain't tried.
If you've got a college degree and you came here for opportunity, you won't find in Portland, Oregon. In the southeast, you can mingle with some hipsters.
Yeah, your band sucks.
Girl, you can mingle with gay pride.
Pink is the new black.
Southwest does nothing there. Northeast just makes me scared.
What you looking at?
23rd is where I wanna die. Do you have too much responsibility? Do you want a career in delivery? Well, come on down to Portland, Oregon.
Well, that's it. F that. I'm never writing anything.
Yeah.
That's it. All right. Well, that was a nice idea I had like a year ago. Let me throw that away. Thank you. The Young Immortals, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. All right.
Thank
Once
you so
again,
much for having us.
Oh, dude. No, yes, you guys are great. Look, there's too much, and I don't mean this sounds cheesy, but there's too much bad music in the world not to focus on stuff that's actually good. You know what I mean? So you find something good, you got to play it.
Can we quote you on that?
Yes, you can. Put me in your self-serving press kit. And they heal lepers, kids. The Young Immortals, tomorrow, the Hawthorne Theater, doors open at 7:30. You can get tickets, $10, through Tickets West, 503-224-TIX, T-I-X-X, or go to myspace.com/TheYoungImmortals.
Can you buy tickets at the door, too?
Yeah, I imagine you can.
Okay.
I think it might be a little bit more just to get the donations up, but I don't really know.
To help the children.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. How long until we begin our...
40.
Whatever. All right. Scott Daly, FilmFeverRadio.com. You want to jump on the mic real quickly here?
Sarah's mic.
You guys got the three-person or the three-movie Star Wars commentary
out
right now?
Yeah, we've got episodes 4, 5, and 6, otherwise known as Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, at FilmFeverRadio.com, plus a episode this week of Film Fever Radio where nothing really happens. So
excellent.
Enjoy.
Fantastic. There you go.
What do you want? We did a six-hour commentary.
No, it's true. I was there. It was chaos. It was great. All right. We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Steve Kassenbaum and Jim Roop and Ed McCarthy for joining us today. Also, the Young Immortals and Scott Daly, plus Cross Country Nate, whose further adventures will be chronicled beginning Monday on the Rick Emerson Show. Him along with his girlfriend, Kenesha, and his son, DeLion. So thank you all for coming in. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day with the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, it is Tim Riley. The gatekeeper is Dave Zinn, and of course our intrepid PA is the one and only Scotty J. Tomorrow, Car and Driver Radio Live 6 to 9, Miles Around with Dennis Pitchenbarger, 9 to 11. As always, my friends.
In, Bobcat.
As always, my friends, thank you for listening. Don't let the bastards grind you down. Do try to help the retarded. I raised $29 for the Special Olympics today. What did you do, you sons of bitches? We'll see y'all on Monday. Have a good weekend. Be safe, y'all. See you then. Bye.